Ready when you are, AGP. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to our regular city council meeting. It's Tuesday, April 8th. We're at the Veterans Memorial Hall. Welcome. For the record, all members of council are present. We have a quorum. And at this time, if you'll please join me in a moment of silence. Thank you. At this time, if Mr. Endersby would lead us in the pledge, please. Thank you, Eric. And at this time, Mr. Pannoni, a closed session report?
There is nothing to report because we didn't have any closed sessions.
Thank you very much. And we'll move on to mayor and council reports and announcements. And I would just start off with Mr. Endersby and I did go to Washington, D.C., and we were teleconferencing then. So thank you, Christine, for running the meeting. Well done. And I'll be giving a report on that next council meeting. Also, there was a Jeff Simpson from our wonderful fire department was honored at the Masonic Temple a couple of weeks ago. It was an annual honorary dinner in recognition of his superior service, and so we just wanted to acknowledge that. And then, Mr. Livick, if you could just give us a brief update on the water situation.
As I've reported in the past, the water situation is kind of an ever-moving target, although the county seems to be firming up the allocations for 2013 that we are going to be able to receive our carryover water, 2014. Through 2014, we're still not sure about the 2015 water, whether that water will be available. So we're still working with folks to maximize our conservation efforts, still permitting, working with coastal staff to get a final permit on our desal plant, and working on our well fields to make sure they're all up and running. But and then there's a few county projects that may get us water that are in the works, a way to get water through CMC into the Chorro Valley pipeline to deliver water to the city if needed.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
George, any announcements? Christine?
Yes, thank you very much. A really quick follow-up. Do you have any idea, Mr. Levick, on the timing of the permit for the desal plant from Coastal?
We started this permitting effort probably 2 months ago. We've sent an application in. They responded with questions. We answered those questions. We responded with more answers. Hopefully, we're at our last round of question and answer right now. What we're trying to do is schedule a face-to-face meeting with the coastal staff and with the desal experts so that we can get all those issues out on the table. We're talking with a national expert on permitting desal plants to give us a little bit of help with the permitting with that. So I would expect in the next few weeks there'll be some movement on coastal staff.
Okay, great. Thank you. I get a lot of questions from the community, probably the other council members too, about desal, considering we're in the drought now, so thanks for that. So I have two announcements from the past and one for the future. I attended for the mayor while he was away the SLOCOG meeting as the alternate for Morro Bay, and I wanted to share an upcoming workshop that is of particular interest to us here in our city. It is about the Chorro Valley Trail. So that will be the Class 1 connector from Morro Bay through Cuesta College and into San Luis Obispo. So if you're interested in the progress of that project, there's a workshop on Tuesday, April 15, and the time is 5 o'clock. They say 5 to 7. And it's at the Slow Government Center on Monterey Street, and that's where the Board of Supervisors meets. If you'd like more information, you can give me a call at my phone number, which is also on the city website. It is 305-3759, or you can email me by way of the city website for information. So that's Tuesday, April 15, about the Chorro Valley Trail. And also just to let you know that Bike Month is coming up. The entire month of May has events for Bike Month. We'll be doing things here in Morro Bay. And if you would like more information on that, you can go to rideshare.org, or you could call Rideshare at 781-1385. And also this past Friday, I'd like to offer congratulations to the Morro Bay Police Department and to Chief Christie. They celebrated their annual dinner on Friday at the community center, and there were many employees recognized, many volunteers recognized, and we got to see our youth in action with the Morro Bay Police Explorers were also on hand. A very large crowd this year, and a really nice presentation was made in honor of Morro Bay's 50th. And we also got to see that first look at the 1964 police car that has been transformed into Morro Bay police car. So that was greeted visitors there. I thought that was kind of a surprise to see it there in advance of the things coming up in the future. So thanks to Chief Christie and her staff for putting together a really nice evening for all of us. And then one item for the future, talking about the 50th, I wanted you to ask you to mark your calendars for the Morro Bay 50th Founders Day Community Picnic, which is going to be Thursday, July 17. That's at Tidelands Park from 4 to 7. More details are coming soon, and if you would like to get involved in the planning, we're getting started with that this week, so give me a call, again, 305-3759, or reach me through the city website on my email. So that's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Nancy?
Just want to add my congratulations to Chief Christie for a wonderful evening. Very, very helpful and informative and interesting in many ways. Also over the weekend was the Morro Bay Beautiful Annual Yard Sale, which was another wonderful success. Every motel in town was filled for Saturday night, and I know our garden club had a very successful sale, and we had people from as far south as Valencia and from valley towns, Fresno, Bakersfield, all the little cities in the valley. Even Kingsburg, I think, was one of them. So it was a very busy weekend, but very, very successful and brought a lot of people into town. Just following up quickly on Bike Month in May, and I'm sorry I didn't bring the exact date with me, but you can check the Morro Bay 50th website for the date of the 50th bike ride, which will be a tour of city parks. And for those people who may not be riding a bike these days, there will also be a trolley following along. So the 17th, thank you. Yes, it's May 17th, will be the city 50th anniversary bike ride. So we're trying to do something every single month for the rest of the year. And I think that's probably it. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Noah?
Thank you. I just had a couple of quick announcements. One is to follow up about the State of the Bay put on by Morro Bay National Estuary Program. It's a month-long celebration of our estuary. Last weekend they had a State of the Bay presentation at the Community Center, and that's going to be followed up by a whole host of events the rest of this month. And a couple that are going to be happening between now and the next council meeting are a Family Day at Tidelands Park. That's going to be Saturday, April 12th. From 10 to 2, and there's going to be all sorts of games, exploration opportunities, and treats. So that'll be at Tidelands. And then there's a reception at the Morro Bay Arts Center focused on watercolor on the 13th of April from 2 to 4. And then a whole other range of events, and you can find out more at mbnep.org. That's Morro Bay National Estuary Program.org. And find out how you could tap in and learn more about our estuary. And then I just did want to thank everyone that was involved with the launch of the Estero Bay Radio and what we were able to do last weekend and kicking that off, or the weekend before, and celebrating 97.3 FM. It's low-power Estero Bay Community Radio, and there's some really fun programs already occurring there and room for more. So if you have an interest in getting out there and letting your voice be heard, sharing music, information, or whatever, you You can find out more information by listening to 97.3 or go to EsteroBayRadio.com. And so the plans are to eventually also broadcast our council meetings on the radio. Thank you.
Great, thanks. And before we go to public comment, public presentations, we don't have any, but we do have a proclamation to present, and the gentleman is here to receive that. Could I get a consensus to pull item A2 from the consent agenda? And that would be item A2 is proclamation declaring May 10th and 2014 as Letter Carriers Food Drive Day, and I would need a motion to approve that.
So moved.
We have a motion. Do I have a second? We have a motion by Christine, a second by Noah. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, say no. None. Motion carries. At this time, I will take item A2 and proclamation and deliver it to the gentleman in the audience, and I think we have Joe Gibson here to receive that, so I'll meet him down at the podium. Okay, Joe, it's my honor to present this proclamation, and I'll just go ahead and read it for the viewers and audience, and then you can say a few words if you'd like.
Sure.
This is a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay declaring May 10th, 2014, Letter Carriers Food Drive Day. Whereas every year on the second Saturday in May, letter carriers across the country collect non-perishable food as part of the nation's largest one-day food drive, distributing the donations to local food banks, and whereas the Letter Carriers Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive is just one example of how letter carriers work to make a difference in the lives of those they serve. Since the pilot drive was held in 1991, more than 1 billion pounds of food have been collected. And whereas the City of Morro Bay would like to recognize all letter carriers for their hard work and their commitment to their communities. All of the food collected in our community stays in our community, and the City of Morro Bay support carriers' efforts to help those in need in our community. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Morro Bay does hereby proclaim Saturday, May 10th, 2014, as Letter Carriers Food Drive Day in the City and County of San Luis Obispo, and encourage the citizens of our community to support the food drive by placing non-perishable food items in or near your mailbox on Food Drive Day. Your letter carrier will pick it up while delivering the mail, and together we can all help feed our hungry. So, Joe, thank you very much.
Sure.
Do you have a few words you'd like
sure.
to comment on?
Thank you.
First, thanks to the council for this recognition. As Jane mentioned, we've collected over 1 billion pounds in the last 20 years or so, and this is the one largest one-day collection of food in the country. Last year, we collected over 74 million pounds of food nationally. Locally here in our Central Coast, we collected over 90,000 pounds of food. And like Jamie mentioned, that food does stay local within our community. About 1 in 5 Americans do suffer from hunger throughout the year. And we conduct this food drive very strategically because this is the part of the year where food banks start to run low, since most food drives happen during the holidays. So thank you again. Every bit of advertising helps to make this year just a little bit better.
Thank you, Joe. At this time, we have normally we have a business spot, but I don't think we have them here. So at this time, we do have the Charter School Family Partnership that was interested in doing some public comment, and I'll open it up for public comment if Ms. Castellanos would like to help lead her students off. Public comment is now open. Please come forward. State your name. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Sonia Lanzan Castellanos, and I'm the educational coordinator and teacher at the Family Partnership Charter School. We have the distinct pleasure of having Mayor Irons come out to our school and tell us about local government, and then also led us in a lesson on how to write a proclamation, which was just wonderful. I have many students who wanted to be here but couldn't, but three who are here who would like to tell you a little bit about our school. They practiced being less than 2 minutes, and then I had one student who handed me his writing and said, please read it for me. So I'm going to start with Annika Velasquez.
Hello, my name is Annika Velasquez, and I attend Family Partnership Charter Montessori Morro Bay. At my school, we believe in working at our own pace with individual learning styles. So let's say you are just done with your math work and you don't have to wait for everybody else and you can just go and grab your science work. We also like to be inclusive at our school, so there's like no clubs and everybody's included and we're all very social with each other, and I like that a lot. Also at our school, we have strict health food. I don't know what you call it, but you can only have fruits and vegetables for snack, and for lunch, there's nothing like candy or sodas or cookies or chocolate. It's all very healthy. And we're also working on partnership versus dominator. So that's how we learn to be kind of each other, and I like that way of learning a lot. Thank you. And next we have one of my friends is going to talk about hands-on learning and field trips.
Thank you, Annika.
Hi, I'm Fletcher. I also go to the Family Partnership Montessori School in Morro Bay. And I wanted to talk about how instead of sitting down for a given amount of time and on one subject and then moving on to the next, we have hands-on learning where we can actually walk around and choose different things at different times. I'm also here to talk about how instead of doing like one field trip at the end of the year, we do multiple throughout the year. Like Rancho El Choro, the Tech Museum, the Irrigation Museum, and We Day. And also, another thing about hands-on learning, instead of reading about gray whales out of textbooks, for example, we actually got to go out in the Bay of Santa Barbara and see a gray whale. Thank you.
Thank you.
From another student who couldn't be here, these are the words of Owen Betancourt. Hello, I'm Owen. I've been in three different learning environments since kindergarten. The first was in Washington State, where I went to a Waldorf school from kindergarten through second grade. Then I went to public school from third grade through half of fifth grade, and most recently, the Montessori school here in Morro Bay. These three experiences have been wonderful in their many ways. Right now, I'm having an amazing time at the Montessori school. At Montessori, there's a lot of one-on-one time with the teacher. If you're behind on a subject, you can go at your own pace. Yet, if you're doing really well on a subject, you don't have to wait for the rest of the class to complete your work. If you are the kind of kid that cannot stay still at your desk the entire day, Montessori would be a good fit for you, because once you have finished a page in science, for example, you could then get up and go and do a different table to work on writing. You can get up and move to a different table without needing the permission of your teacher, as long as you stay on task and get your work done. Montessori gives children the opportunity to be self-directed and responsible for their own work. This is different from traditional public school settings and methods of having the teacher telling us exactly what to do and when to do it. My favorite thing about Montessori is that there are requirements to be met, but freedom in how to complete the tasks. Some of my favorite lessons were discovering pi all by myself, and right now I'm working on my geometry portfolio, which covers circle studies and squares to angles and lines. I think Montessori can be the right fit for the right kid. The type of student who would do well in a Montessori environment is one who is independent, who wants to learn and is responsible, and likes hands-on approaches to learning. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Sonia. Appreciate it. And with that, public comment is open for those of you who would like to speak to items that are not on the agenda, or for those of you who can't stay for an item that's later on in the evening and want to speak to that now. Public comment is open. Welcome. You have 3 minutes. Please state your name.
Hello, I'm Susan Stewart, resident of Morro Bay and business owner. I'm also a chamber board member and want to announce that the chamber is sponsoring a candidates forum on April 17th. We have had RSVPs from every candidate who's running for office. It will be from 8:30 to 10 here in this room at the Vets Hall. Again, that is April 17th. The League of Women Voters has agreed to run the program for us. If you've been to any of the other ones that they've done, it's excellent. You can come with your questions that you want to ask the candidates. They shuffle the cards and make sure we're not duplicating questions, and really run a great show. They are people who do not live in Morro Bay, so they're completely independent. And we'll ask the same questions of every candidate, although you could ask mayor-specific questions or council-specific questions if you want. So hopefully you will all come. We are working on whether we will be having AGP film it. It's a little pricey, but we'll see what we can work out with that. If not, maybe we can get the radio station to come in and broadcast it for us, something like that. So hopefully we see every citizen of Morro Bay out here. It's a big hall. We can take everybody in here, I'm sure, or at least all you voting people. And come with some ideas, some questions, and hope we see you there. Thank you.
Thanks, Susan. Public comment is open for those who'd like to speak. You may do so now. For items not on the agenda.
Good evening, City Council. Tom Hafer, Morro Bay Commercial Fishing Association. We're going to have Blessing of the Fleet April 27th, followed, that will be at noon on the North T Pier, followed by a barbecue here at the Vets Hall. We're going to start serving at 1. It's open to the public. Anybody can come, bring your families. It's open to everyone. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm hoping the camera will come on, Nancy. All right, this way. Where are you, Nancy? Here. There you can see it. Okay. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is John Barta. If you lived in a town where your tap water looked like this, you'd sure be looking for a solution. Here's what you might come up with. The ideal system would be passive solar. That is to say, it would use light directly from the sun with no interference by us to evaporate salt water into distilled water. We could then let the evaporated water be cooled naturally, which would cause it to condense into liquid water. We would then collect the liquid water, put it into pipes, and ship it to our homes. As with most things, it would be advantageous to build it really big for economies of scale. So we'd want to get other towns into this deal along with us to keep the costs as low as possible. We'd form a kind of water co-op to equitably share the water and the costs. Everyone would pay a fair share of the cost based on the available water for their share and how much the pipes would cost to bring it to them. I just described the State Water Project to you. This water is simulated tap water from Morro Bay in 1992. We wisely became part of that passive solar, naturally condensed, cooperatively distributed water system by a 65% vote of the people in Morro Bay. You also need to know this. The actual water we get from the State Water Project is nearly free. It costs about $40 per acre foot, even less than what it costs to pump groundwater. The biggest cost of state water is the cost of the pipelines that deliver it to us. We paid for those pipelines with borrowed money in 1996, which will be paid off in full 7 years from now. We will burn the mortgage in 2021. At that point, our state water costs will be reduced to nearly nothing. And if our water cooperative decides to make additional improvements to the system, our share will be less than 0.1% of the total that is spent. Yes, some years there is less rain than others, but there's always going to be some water to distribute, store, and deliver for members of the co-op like us. And this year is no exception. We'll be getting our full needs met by state water this year, because we've saved some of our past share in the state water bank. Yes, there really is a state water bank. And the state just announced that even though there's a drought this year, they'll be pumping water south to help replenish the state water bank, making future draws possible. If we ever really do have an actual reduction in deliveries of state water, we will have other ways to bring water to our taps, primarily groundwater pumping from the Morrow Basin and through the use of our desalinator. These backup sources will tide us through times of reduced state water deliveries, although they won't be nearly as inexpensive or as high quality as state water. For the past 16 years, state water has met over 87% of our needs. It is the backbone of our system in Morrow Bay, and we'd be crazy to change that. Good timing.
Thank you, John. Anybody else for public comment?
Good evening, distinguished council. Ken Vesterveld, resident of Morrow Bay. I'd like to talk to you about a couple of events that are coming up here. The first one's going to be this weekend, which is the Emergency Vehicle Car Show. It's our fourth year putting this on. There will be vehicles that are police cars, fire, ambulance, military, CAL FIRE is going to be here also with their big bulldozers, as I call them. Excavators, and it's a great event for the grandkids, the kids, everything else, and it'll be on Morrow Bay Boulevard starting at 9 o'clock until 3 at Main Street. And then on Friday night, if we can get all the businesses notified, there is what they call a Code 3 ride. It'll be start at the Front Street parking lot, and it'll head to registrants in the car show. And a great event again on Friday night of that cruise, which is going to be the second. And it's a great little cruise from 6 to 8 p.m. And it's become a little family event for a lot of people and businesses who have little gatherings at their businesses to watch this whole thing. And we really appreciate it. If we can get some people who want to sponsor, again, it's $30. If you want to go on the website, it's MorrowBayCarShow.org, and you can make the contact, which will end up being me, but we would appreciate if you can do that. Any questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
This is in May, Ken?
It'll be May 1, 2, 3, 4. This weekend is the Merchant Vehicle Car Show. Appreciate it. Thank you ever so much.
Thank you, Ken.
Nancy Castle, quickly changing hats. I'm wearing this hat, the latest Easter bonnet that I've made for the Easter bonnet parade that will be part of the Easter egg hunt and barbecue fundraiser put on by the Eagles on April 19th, the day before Easter, at Lila Kaiser Park. And so everybody get out there, old straw boaters or whatever they have, put a couple of silk flowers or real flowers on it. This one has a peep on it, for those of you who can see it. And I'd also like to give you an update on the food group. It's been 3 weeks since I've been here. We've upped our numbers. We're feeding 40 to 50 people each Monday night. It's going quite well. The Lions served food last night, and it was most excellent. And it's just a really good program. And, again, I'm so grateful to Susan Sladen. She's still bringing stuff from city staff that is contributing to her, and that we're very grateful for that, as are all the participants. You know, just what Joe was saying about hunger in the United States is very sobering, recognizing that this is the time of year that food distribution centers run low on food. It's a great thing that our community is participating to the level it is, and I'm grateful to be a part of it. Have a great meeting.
Thanks, Nancy.
Good evening, Council. Carla Wixom, board member of the Friends of Morrow Bay Fire, and I'm just here since Keith Taylor's not here doing his dog and pony show to remind everyone that Saturday, April 26th, is open house at the Morrow Bay Fire Department from 2 to 5. It's being hosted by the Friends of Morrow Bay Fire, and we want to invite everyone to come down and find out about our organization and the support that it gives to the fire department. They'll be doing demonstrations, showing the equipment, the station. There'll be information about the reserve program and also about joining the organization, the Friends of the Fire. So 2 to 5, Saturday, April 26th.
Thank you, Carla. Anybody else for public comment?
Good evening, everyone. Jennifer Redmond with Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce. And I just wanted to highlight a couple things more that's happening this month. We are going to have a chamber mixer on Thursday the 17th at the Art Center here on Main Street. It starts at 5:30 to around 7 p.m. Please come and see the wonderful artists that we have here in Morro Bay. It's a wonderful event to bring your family, your relatives. It's amazing how many artists we have in town, and we have a wonderful place to go look at art right here in Morro Bay at the Art Center. So please come and visit and say hello and meet them. Also on the 28th, Monday, at the Community Center, we are going to have another sign ordinance meeting, and it is for the North Morro Bay businesses. So if you own a business in North Morro Bay, please come by and gosh, I'm a little nervous today. I haven't done this in a while. It's 8:30 to 10 at the community center, and get to ask your questions of Rob about the sign ordinances for North Morro Bay, and then put on your calendars for May 19th, a Monday, also at the community center from 8:30 to 10, and that's for the Embarcadero businesses. So if you have any questions, stop by the Chamber of Commerce and ask Lisa or call Rob. Thank you.
Thanks, Jennifer. Anybody else for public comment? Seeing none, I'll close public comment, bring it back to council. Thanks, everybody. At this point, we'll move on to consent calendar. And anybody like to pull something on the consent calendar?
Prior to that, would we be able to just respond to one or two things from public comment?
Sure.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Levick, I was just wondering if...
State Water Project. So it runs about $40 an acre foot. But getting it here through the pipeline costs us close to $1,500 an acre foot. There are future projects to keep the State Water Project viable. So while this debt service may end in 2021, I'm sure that the state has plenty of ways to spend money and to have all of its customers pay for that. There's a big project to get water through the Delta that if we need to keep the State Water Project viable, will have to be paid for by all its customers.
And just really briefly, I didn't think that there was any movement on the staff side to get out of using state water.
No. No direction or... No, we're not getting out of state water at this point in time.
Okay, thank you very much.
George, anything? Nancy? Noah?
Yeah, I wanted to follow up on the approximate annual cost for that debt service is about $2 million. Am I correct on that?
I think that's about the total cost for water. So 99% of it is debt service. It's total cost about $1,600 an acre foot. $40 of that is for the water and ongoing operational costs of the State Water Project. If I might, Mr. Mayor.
Sure.
Also on the 17th, right before the candidate forum, we're having a Public Works Advisory Board meeting. So come out to the Public Works Advisory Board meeting and stay for the candidates forum.
Okay. Got it.
What's that? Oh, it's 8 to 10 in the morning? 8:30 to 10 in the morning. Sorry. Stay for the Public Works Advisory Board meeting that'll happen at 6 o'clock in the evening. I apologize for that.
After the mixer.
After the mix.
Okay, here we go. Bringing it back to council. Thanks, you guys. Consent items. Anybody like to pull anything off the consent? George? Christine?
A1, please.
A1. Anybody else? A1 and A6.
A4.
Anything else? Can I have a motion to approve the consent calendar, the consent agenda, all items except for A1, A6, and A4?
So moved.
We have a motion by Nancy, a second by Noah. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. Item A1, Christine.
Thank you very much. It's just a brief opportunity for discussion amongst the council for some consistency that came up when I was reading and the minutes from our last meeting on March 25th. There were two terms being used at the same time, the vice mayor and then the mayor pro tem. So I followed up, and it turned out that through our city clerk and then through our city attorney, that when we're talking about the mayor actually, the vice mayor actually facilitating a meeting, it's appropriate to call them the mayor pro tem. So when Mr. Pannone reviewed our Morro Bay Municipal Code, he saw that we do have the two terms used in there. And his opportunity was to just have us bring it forward and discuss it. If we wanted to, for consistency's sake, choose mayor pro tem, then we could do that, and it would be a simple amendment to the Morro Bay Municipal Code. And then it would be, for consistency purposes, that same title all the way through. Because you can see in the minutes we're saying that someone is a vice mayor, but yet when they're acting in that role, they're actually called the mayor pro tem. So it's a small edit, but it just seems that if we could clean something up like that, it might be a good time to do it. So
would that be done through a future agenda item? Okay.
Yeah, so I have a motion if we wanted to make that motion tonight to sort of get that rolling.
Okay, and I have one little edit as well.
Okay, so that would just be that. That's the only item I have on the minutes.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. And then on, is there anybody else on A1? No? So on page 8, I just want to make a clarification. It was a bit actually on some of my comments, and just to clear it up, there's one sentence, the second paragraph down, when we were talking about the 4th of July committee, and the sentence is basically, you know, if we move the firewoods over the sand spit, we probably wouldn't have to worry about raising funds. And that's not my statement. I was actually repeating the statement of what George said earlier. So I think for the minutes, I think it would be nice to reflect that. So I said, so I'd like to add in there from what George said, if we move the fireworks over to the sand spit, accordingly, and I can write that to you, Jamie, to make that more accurate. And if we can approve that tonight, then I'll just go ahead and give you the corrections. Any other comments? None? Christine, did you want to make a motion then?
Yes, no, that's fine with me to do it.
And we'll add that to the minutes as well.
Okay. So if there's no other discussion on that, then I would move.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. Great. Item A4, and that would be Nancy?
Being initial there.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure that both our commercial fishermen and our sport fishermen are now aware that as long as you have one of those squirty nozzle things, and I know there's a name for them, on your hose, that if you don't have any other source of water available, you can hose down those decks and get rid of that salt water and other stuff that gets on top of your boat deck. So that's been taken care of. Thank you, Mr. Leivick.
Anybody? I just have one more question for Mr. Leivick. Just we talked about this a little bit as well. So if we go into more stringent water conservation measures, can you just explain what would happen then?
So we're at the third level of water conservation in our code. We have a fourth level, and then an emergency declaration. So the next level kind of tightens down those restrictions a little bit further, basically gets rid of all outside water use except for health and safety issues. The emergency declaration would allow the council to set numerical limits on water usage. So say the council could set a limit of you might only be able allowed to use 80% of your average water use or 80% of some norm. Sometimes setting 80% of what your average bill is penalizes the people that are already doing a great job conserving water, so we would have to look at that language before we brought it forward. But those are the types of measures that council can employ if we need to, and prolonged drought. Let's say the county calls next month and said there's been a change in state water and it's not going to be available. I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but it's an ever-changing, almost on a bi-weekly basis for the past few weeks on where water is coming from and how we're going to have it. So that would allow the council to kind of ratchet down those water conservation measures. And if I might, again, I won't announce a meeting at the wrong time, but I will announce that, I guess, we're, in addition to boat washing, it's also allowing car washing with other than a bucket. You can use a spray nozzle to rinse your car. But that doesn't mean you have to wash your car. I just want to make that clear to everybody that it's all right to have a dirty car. And if you want to see a prime example, you can look at my little Fit out there with the surf racks on it. It's a pretty dirty car. I saw an ad from one of the other cities that it was captioned, had a dirty truck in the picture. Some people may see a dirty truck, but we see a good citizen. So just want to, that because you can doesn't mean you have to wash your car. Thank you.
Thanks for that advocating.
Could I ask Mr. Leivick for just one more point of comment? Checking out here. So if we go to level four and we're talking about health and safety issues, hosing bird feces off your deck would still be a health and safety issue for a fisherman, right?
It could be, because we want to look at what other methods there are. You know, can you use dry methods to get most of it off and then minimize the use of water? Can you pressurize salt water and hose it off with salt water and then do the final rinse with fresh water? I think the primary use for water is going to be for drinking of water. That's going to be, if we get to that, restricted.
Thank you. And with A4, do we have a motion for that?
Move approval.
So we have a motion to approve item A4, or second? We have a motion by Nancy, a second by Christine. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. And then on to item A6. That would be Noah.
Yes, thank you. A6 is the water reclamation facility project status. I pulled this because we will not be having a JPA meeting this month, and I thought it was important to give the public a chance to hear what some of the activities have been over the last month, and then also a little bit about what's coming up. So as one of the members of our JPA subcommittee, along with Mayor Irons, we've had the chance to tour the Rancho Colina Steve McElvain site in the Moro Valley, along with city staff and our consultant, Mr. Rickenbach, and Mike Nunley. And that was a really excellent, informative tour. And I believe staff's working to get tours scheduled for the rest of the council, respecting the Brown Act, of course. And then we followed that up with a visit to the Regional Water Board to visit with them.
We'll have, at that point in time, have the draft schedules, the detailed draft schedules. So we'll have the full five-year schedule and all its items on there, as people are used to seeing those Gantt or PERT charts. That shows the bars as a project move forward. We also will drill down to a shorter range schedule as to what needs to be done in the next 90 days, 6 months, so that we have that very well detailed out what is going to happen. In addition to that, they're in the process of preparing a cash flow diagram to show council, because as we accelerated the schedule, you know, what that budget impacts will be. So when the approximate quarters in a year, not the days probably, the quarters in the year, when we'll be needing certain amounts of cash flow to keep the project moving forward, that will help us in the budgeting process. And then as we move forward with looking at with our rate consultant and towards the future rates.
Thanks, Mr. Leivick. With the schedule draft that will be released before it comes to council, will that be out on Notify Me as well? People signed up for the Notify Me?
Yeah, we'll publish it on the website, and then as we publish that, it gets fed into the Notify Me. It'll be also, we'll do a news flash like we've done in the past. I noticed that it has been a while since we've updated this, the progress on the website, so we'll add this, the project status as of this staff report tomorrow to the website if council does approve this report. So we'll put that up there, and then yes,
great.
Also have the schedule. Sorry.
Thank you. That was it for me.
Great. Thanks. You have a motion to approve item A6.
Any other comments from council?
Christine?
For me, yes. Thanks for pulling this item. I think not having a JPA meeting this month is sort of a good thing in some ways for those of us who have a lot of meetings, but then that's also where we talk about this project and sometimes a little more detail on the months when, well, on a week like today where it's on the consent item. So I do appreciate having the chance to ask some questions, and most of the questions I had were about Rancho Colina. And about continuing visits there as well for all of us. And then also just keep in mind that, you know, it would be great if we all did get a chance to visit and see things that the subcommittee gets to see as well. So it's awkward because there are five of us and we have to follow the Brown Act, so it's a little repetitious for staff. But knowing that, if we plan ahead for those kinds of schedules, then, you know, it's kind of good to have that in advance, and then we can all make our availability known to you as well. And then I was just wondering, when you had your meeting with the county, did the water board staff discuss anything about how they feel about projects, or did you get any information from the water board that you could share with us? I mean, it's always, they're sort of like, it seems to me sometimes the water board has a lot of power in the situation, so wondering if there's anything you could share to report back to the community at large about that.
Yeah, go ahead, Noah. I think Rob probably has some comments as well. I think there maybe can tie in all the players.
The executive director of the water board, Mr. Harris, is very enthusiastic about a large regional facility at the California Men's Colony site. So he is assisting the analysis of that site. Perhaps the water board will make available some of the fine money that the men's colony has to pay to assist the county in doing some evaluations of that existing plant to see what kinds of improvements would be need to be made to move that project a little further along. You know, we were pretty frank with the regional board staff and the executive director that going to the men's colony site is a much higher cost than something without 9.3 miles of pipeline associated with it. So, you know, we're talking about how can outside money be brought to the table to help fund that additional cost. And, you know, Mr. Harris is encouraging about that there can be outside money brought to the table, but we're still working that front in parallel process with the more local options.
Okay, thank you. And was there any information shared from the county side about the timing for taking over that facility from the state, or any kind of legislative action that we've talked about before? I still want to have that conversation about the water and who at the end of the day, whose water is it that could be reclaimed or when it comes out of a process. So just keeping that in mind, that I think a lot of us are really curious about if we go into a large facility with a lot of partners, whose water is it? Just sort of keeping that question out there for when we have these regional meetings and have opportunities to ask those questions. Okay.
Thank
That's
you.
It. Thank you.
Thanks, Christine. Noah, do you have some more follow-up?
Yeah, just another point of the discussion out there, and part of the interest with touring Rancho Colina with Mr. McElvain, the owner of the properties there, just to the east of the park. He has, for the Rancho Colina Trailer Park, packaged plants on site that is needing attention, and he's been informed by the Water Board that it's not likely something that he'll be able to continue to operate in the future. They're very interested in regionalizing at all different levels. So the conversation was, and he's enthusiastic to explore the potential of Morro Bay working with them to build a plant on his property there, because he'd like to get out of treating wastewater for the park. So that was another discussion point that prompted the request to the Water Board to visit that same area and tour the possibilities out there. The other thing that was discussed was the idea of potential decentralized storage, working with the farming community and the city, and evaluating the possibilities of a storage enhancement system for the valley and Morro Bay. That was something in the early phases that we talked about, and I thought was pretty interesting.
Okay, good discussion. Any other comments? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion. Noah?
Yes, I'll move approval of A6.
Second. We have a motion by Noah, a second by Nancy. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. And we're right at the 7 o'clock hour, so we can push on to our hearing items, B1. Just give me 1 minute to shuffle through, and I'll be right there. So item B1 is introduction of the first reading of Ordinance 585, Amendment to Title 17, which is the secondary unit ordinance. And at this time, Ms. Jacinth has got on this report, but Mr. Livick, this is going to be a continued item. Is that correct?
Yes, we're requesting council that to continue this item. We have yet to receive our comments that we requested, or that Coastal requested that we continue this item for. We believe that we'll have all those comments ready for the next meeting, and ready to present that. With this item, we're having to make adjustments to existing muni code, and they wanted to see the red line version of that so they can actually see what that new ordinance would look like.
Thank you. And with that, we'd open up for public comment, since it is a noticed item. Public comment is open for item B1, which is a secondary ordinance amendment.
Good Mr. evening, Barta. Once again, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is John Barta. I'm commenting on the secondary ordinance thing. I got up here before, and I lauded, you know, the process that was going on. There is one thing, though, that I did catch, and I want to bring to your attention. The secondary dwelling code applies to all residential zones, okay? So it applies to not only single-family zones, but to duplex and multifamily zones as well. And it occurred to me that while it's maybe appropriate in the judgment of the council that we want to keep it to 900 square feet in single-family zones because of single-family compatibility issues and so forth, that those issues don't really exist in R2 and R3 zones. And so I think it would be appropriate to, in the R2, R3, and R4 zones, increase it back to the 1,200 square feet, because those are neighborhoods that have been designated for higher density already. They have multiple dwelling units on the properties already. And so really it's kind of, at that point, almost silly to be saying, well, one of your duplexes can only be 900 square feet if you have a smallish, R3 or R2 lot. Anyway, just thought I'd throw that out there, get it in the record, and hope you give it some thought. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Anybody else for public comment?
Good evening, Council. Barry Brannon, City of Morro Bay. One of the unintended consequences you have with any change is not so much what we envision right now, but what someone else envisions. And so I was reading the Sunday Trib, and it's a little notice in here that up in Cayucas, someone is looking for a minor use permit because they want to convert.
Close public comment, bring it back to council. Any other comments from council?
Yeah, I just had a quick comment following up from public comment in terms of the idea of capping at 900 square feet, which was mentioned. The idea was that would trigger, going beyond 900 square feet, would trigger the Planning Commission review process. And I wanted to give Mr. Leibig a chance to speak to that.
That is correct. So below 900 square feet would not trigger a Planning Commission use permit. Above would. All of the projects are still subject, because we are live within the coastal zone, a coastal development permit, which is an administrative approval but is appealable to the Planning Commission. So there is due process for the public on these units.
And if you could speak a little to the idea of them being converted to vacation rentals.
I'm not an expert on our vacation rental ordinance, but we don't have a restriction nor a permitting process for vacation rentals. We have a business license process. We have a you have to get a business license, but there's no conditional use permit required to have a vacation rental at your home. I'm not sure that I can address that completely at this meeting. When our planning staff is here, they can probably address that a little bit better. But I can speak to the R2, R3, R4 issue is you probably, if you had enough density on your lot, you wouldn't propose to build on an R2 lot, let's say, and you had enough land area. You would not propose to build a home with a secondary unit. You'd build two primary units and have it be a multifamily unit. There are certain restrictions on secondary units because the primary unit needs to be owner-occupied. If you build it as a multifamily unit, you could rent out both those properties. Secondary unit on a multifamily zoning would have more restrictions on it than so. I guess if I was in the real estate development business, I wouldn't probably propose to build a secondary unit on an R2 lot.
Okay, thanks for the comments. Item B1, do I have a motion to? This is a continued item.
We need a motion to continue the public.
Okay, we have a motion to continue item B1.
So moved.
We have a motion by Nancy, second by George, and that motion would be to continue to
a date certain.
So just to amend that motion to the date certain, April 22nd. Okay. So can I have an amendment to that motion?
Yes.
And that amendment would be to a date certain of April 22nd? Do I have a second? And we have a second. So we have a motion and a second for that amendment. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, item B2, and let's get going on that one. Item B2 is resolution number 2114, initiating proceedings to levy the annual assessment for Cloisters Park and Open Space Landscaping and Lighting Maintenance Assessment District.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Joe Woods is the person that normally presents this resolution to council. He's not able to present this evening. I'll take a shot at it, and I'll ask Rob and Susan to step in and answer any questions that I can't handle. This particular resolution is the first of three hearings that the council will hold on levying the assessment at the Cloisters for park and open space maintenance. It's an annual assessment that is passed by the council. The first and this hearing all will take place tonight is simply directing the staff to come back at the May meeting with the engineer's report and the actual engineering report on the cost for the assessment district. And on June, it would come back for a third time for a hearing, which would be appeal time that would take place as well. And any protest to the levy would take place at that time. Tonight, really the only thing the council is being asked to do is to direct us to go back and prepare the engineer's report for the May meeting. But this is a public hearing, and if anybody wishes to speak to the assessment, obviously it's part of the public hearing. We can answer any questions beyond that, but there's nothing really to present tonight other than just the initiation of the first of three meetings that will be public hearings for the assessment at the Cloisters.
Here we go. Okay, thanks. Any questions from council to my left? To my right? I have one question on, as far as the engineer's report and the possibility. I know it's been typical just to do the engineer's report, but have there been any requests as far as having the engineer's report come back in the format of a maintenance and capital plan, or strictly just, you know, the engineering report as the requirements to maintain that area?
No closures. As we begin another round of proceedings related to levying this assessment, I would like to ensure that the engineer's report be done in accordance with the law and beyond the minimum, that directs that the report be a bottoms-up estimate for items that provide a special benefit to those being assessed. So the special benefit should be identified. I've not ever seen that. And according to the law, the special, and you can probably speak to this better, according to the law, special benefit needs to be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Anybody else for a public comment at this time? Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. And could you respond to that, Joe, at all?
Through the mayor, when a when an assessment is first being imposed or an assessment is being increased, then a study does need to be prepared to show how the increase or the new assessment is specially benefiting the people that are being assessed. That's not what this assessment is. This is a continuation of an assessment, so all we need to do is show that the money that's being collected isn't more than what it's going to be spent for. And my understanding is actually the expenditure the city makes is more than what the assessment is that's made on this one. So legally, you're perfectly fine.
Okay. Any other comments from council? No?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment in preparation for the next meeting. I know that we've had a lot of discussion about this item over the years, and that seems like we're continually working to ensure that we're upholding our obligations. And I know that was some of the issues that were raised by the residents over the course of the last number of years that I've been on the council regarding their concern about our ability to maintain and keep all areas of the assessment district in good condition, but then also to be transparent with the financials and to have a two-way dialogue about some of the priorities and maintenance and so forth. So I'm aware that our staff, and I think maybe perhaps you, Mr. Irons, have had some time to meet with the Cloisters representatives, and that work is ongoing. I think that's a really important part of keeping that relationship, working relationship, and one that we can are upholding our end of the bargain on. So if there's any comments from staff about that as we get deeper into this process or tonight, I'd appreciate to hear about that.
Thank you. Any comments to my left? George? None? Christine?
Yes, thanks for bringing that up, Noah, and thanks for your comments tonight, Ms. Beatty. I think that in the past year, there's not been a quarterly meeting that the mayor or I haven't attended of the Cloisters meetings. And I know I've appreciated what I've learned about their historical experience with communication, responsiveness, transparency with their special district. It is an assessment district that they pay into, and I think it's fair that they participate in some of that process themselves. So I appreciate what I've learned, and I appreciate that we've had some good responsiveness lately with our staff too. We had a meeting recently, a finance committee meeting with members of our finance department and our city manager, as well as some from the Cloisters. And we are scheduling a walkabout for people to walk through the assessment district with our staff and take a look at how things are. And there will be another quarterly meeting that I think the mayor hopefully will be attending. And probably the mayor wants to say a few things too. But for sure, there's been a lot of time and effort since last year's assessment process that at least I know we have spent in participation, and I hope in good partnership with the residents of the Cloisters to work on some of the maybe long-standing issues with the assessment that they've had. So, and I appreciate everyone's patience in getting all of us up to speed, too.
Thank you. And for Ms. Beattie, I'd also encourage you to reach out to Mr. on some of those legal issues and the questions there. I think there's, you know, a lot of help there. So thank you, Joe. With that, if there's no other questions, I would be willing to take a motion on this item.
Sure. I move the City Council adopt resolution number 2114, ordering the preparation of an engineer's report detailing the expenses projected for fiscal year 2014-15 for the maintenance of the Cloisters Park and open space.
We have a motion by Christine, a second by Noah. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. On to item B2. For item B3.
I'll move approval of resolution 22-14, initiating proceedings to levy the annual assessment for North Point Natural Area Landscaping and Lighting Maintenance Assessment District.
Second.
We have a motion by Noah and a second by Nancy. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. That concludes our business items. We're moving on to unfinished business. This might be a decent time to make a 5-minute recess, and then we can come back and move on to item C1. So with that, we'll take a 5-minute recess. Thank you. Okay, here we go. We're all back, and we're moving on to item C1. This is a unfinished business item. It's resolution 2014, reestablishing the Chamber of Commerce Economic and Business Development Agreement for FY 2013-14 to include the Economic Development Work Plan for the remainder of FY 2013-14. Ms. Slayton.
Good evening, Mayor Arons and Council Members. Before you is Resolution 2014, which, as you just said, is the Chamber's Economic and Business Development Agreement, and that is for the fiscal year 2013-14. Also, we have a draft of the agreement that's included. In January 2014, the unintentional expiration of this agreement was discovered. Staff brought this issue to Council in February and received direction to return in 30 days with a scope of work and a revised cost for the fiscal year. The total cost for the agreement is $49,081, which is a $9,344 savings from last year. Staff is recommending the adoption of this resolution to include any changes that the Council wishes to make at this meeting. This concludes my report, Mayor Irons. Thank you.
Okay, Susan, thank you for that. Any questions from Council to my right? Nancy, any questions? Noah, none? George, Christine, none? At this time, we will open up public comment for item C3, reestablishing the Chamber of Commerce Economic Development Business Agreement. For those who'd like to speak to that right now, please come forward. Seeing none, we will close public comment and bring it back. To my left, anybody want to start off? George, you want to start off? Any discussion on this? You're good to go. Christine?
Thank you. Well, first of all, what I'd like to do is thank the volunteers of the Chamber for blood, sweat, and tears to re-energize the organization. I realize it's only been since January that the volunteers have stepped up, certainly, and it's probably been some of the longest 4 months of your lives, because I know you've done a lot of work to keep the organization functioning and serving its members, and I just wanted to appreciate that time and energy taken out of your own businesses and your own personal life to do that. So it's a chamber is a part of the fabric of our city and most cities, so thank you for keeping it operating. I'm sure your membership appreciates the fact that the Chamber is here and is functioning and having meetings like the sign ordinance and assisting them and moving their businesses forward. So at this point, I just wanted to make sure I recognized the volunteers at the Chamber. And I don't have a reason, I really feel very supportive about the revised scope and the changes made and where we're going for the rest of the fiscal year. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Nancy, any comments? Noah?
Yeah, I just have one comment, and I think this is a good scope of work, and I'm supportive of it. I did have one question. Under number 11, there's a discussion about the market local businesses and the community through the development of an all-inclusive website and mobile app, which I was involved with some of the preliminary discussions on that. And one of the things that I thought was a real great opportunity for the city, if that does go forward, was for the city to be able to participate, have the option of participating, particularly for things like our transit system, where you know people could very easily access all the information about how to utilize our transit services and public transportation, and obviously a whole other host of opportunities that the city may want to announce to the public, and utilize the mobile app particularly as another opportunity to get out there. And I'm pretty sure the chamber's totally supportive of this, but I felt like the market local businesses and the community was a little too vague. I almost want to focus it just a bit more and maybe include city services and programs add that in between if it ever.
And tonight we're revisiting that once again because we are in support of a successful chamber and an economic development program. So at this point, I'm in support of this and support of, having our chamber become successful and this program become successful. And with that, I would entertain a motion.
I'll move approval of, Resolution 20-14, reestablishing the Chamber of Commerce Economic Development, Economic and Business Development Agreement for fiscal year 2013/14 to include the economic development work plan for the remainder of fiscal year 2013/14.
Second.
We have a motion by Noah, a second by Nancy. Any discussion? Seeing none.
In the discussion, I'm assuming that everyone is in favor of that inclusion. I don't know if I need to be specific about that.
I assumed that was part of that motion.
Okay. That's what I did as well.
Okay. So are we playing that we agree or we agree with that? Okay.
Yeah.
I agree.
We agree. Yeah. Okay, good.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for that clarification. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. None. Motion carries 5-0. Okay. Item C2. Thank you for that. And item C2 is approval of assignment and assumption of lease site 63-64 and 63W-64. This is the Gray's Inn at 561 Embarcadero from Josephine Gray to Todd Baston and Tamara Gray. Baston, in consideration of the consent of landowner for redevelopment project proposed for the lease site, and that would be Mr. Endersby.
Thank you and good evening. Good evening, Mayor and Council. As you know, we heard this item last year. Last year, we were considering the future of the site. The existing owner of the lease site, Josephine Gray, was in negotiations with a potential buyer for the site. That was Todd and Tamara Baston. They brought their tentative proposal to City Council on the July 9th, 2013 meeting. Council liked it, voted 5-0 to have staff work with the Bastons and bring back their full proposal at a later date. They brought their proposal in sort of a pre-concept form. Council, voted 5-0 to have us work with them. They have since worked with Josephine Gray, the owner of the Gray's Inn, for purchase of the lease site, and they're requesting approval of the assignment and assumption for them to assume that lease and continue on operation of that site. They've also completed their proposal for the improvements and future operation of that lease site and are requesting consent of landowner to submit their project to planning to start that process, that public review process of what they plan to do there. They've submitted their financial necessary paperwork for us to review them as leaseholders, and it met satisfactory review up in administration and finance. Ms. Gray is a tenant in good standing. Their project, I've got AGP, good, they've got it up on the screen there, and you have full-size plans. Basically, their project, in a nutshell, as you know, last year, the Bastons wish was to keep the building as is, largely as is. It wasn't a tear-down type candidate, and the council wished to see the character of that building stay as well. So They're proposing improvements of the main facility in the near term with stairways and deck and roof improvements, ADA access, accessibility access to Hotel Unit A and the gallery, an enhanced viewing corridor between the two, between their building and Kayak Horizons next door, and then ADA access down from the street between them and Kayak Horizons to a new harbor walk, boardwalk that they'll build on the back side of the building back there. So that'd be the eight-foot harbor walk that'll connect to the salt building to the north, and eventually, when we get to Kayak Horizons, hopefully connect to their boardwalk and then to the street end. Increasing the sidewalk height to the full eight-foot width out in front, and then future down the line, replacing the boat dock decking and lower deck, and some roofing, and then eventually replacing the gangway and whatever pilings are needed. So continued operation of the water site, largely as it is. It's pretty well built out in terms of the water lease. It's not a very wide lease. So they don't have much room to do anything new there. So the Bastons are here. I believe the project architect, Gene Dowdy, as well. I'm happy to answer any questions. We're recommending approval of this, and hopefully this is a good project to move forward with.
All right. Thank you, Eric. To my right, any questions for Eric or staff? Noah? George? Christine? Eric, I've just got a couple questions. On. You know, is there a timeline on the improvements that will be discussed tonight on some of these? And, you know, how do you know, how will we know, you know, the whether or not there's a priority on the sidewalk improvement versus the boardwalk improvement, things like that? Do we have any information on that tonight?
I'm sure the Bastons can provide information. The lease is good till 2018. We have yet to enter into any sort of lease negotiations. We can't get that too far out in front of the project for CEQA analysis, but my understanding.
Please state your name, and I'm going to have her set the time for three minutes. I imagine you'd be pretty good with that, and then if we need to adjust, we will.
Okay.
Thanks.
I'm Tamara Baston, and this is
Todd Baston. Good evening.
And we're
Thanks.
From Glendale, California. I would like to just address the idea of the timeline. We wanted to get through the summer season, which I understand is very busy here, and deal with some of the safety issues that concerned us as far as repairs. Then after that, Gene had planned the waterfront. If you take a look at the plans, part of it now expands over the water, which now I understand we have to do the eelgrass study, which was not originally in the plans, but now due to the waterfront decking on the northern building, we've had to readjust that plans, which might prolong starting that. Other than that, we hope to start the walkway and the others just once we kind of get a feel of the business a little bit.
Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Any other comments?
We would like to definitely start with the street side of the property. We think that would be the quickest and the easiest and the most beneficial for the property itself. We would love to expand the sidewalk. We noticed the property to the north has done that, so we could extend that down without any really major reconstruction on our property, so we could handle that, and then we could ramp down the sidewalk area and prepare for the ADA ramp all the way to the boardwalk, and the boardwalk would be probably the last piece of the puzzle.
Okay. Great. Thanks for that. Any other questions? Seeing none. Thanks very much for coming up. And public comment is open. For those who'd like to speak to this item, may do so now. Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. And to my left, George, you want to start off on discussion or anything?
Well, you know that I went to bat for this place because I felt like this is one thing. It was unique, and it fit Morro Bay, and with all the teardowns we've been having down there, I thought for sure that this place could be revised. And it looks like to me they're doing it. They're beginning to start to do a wonderful job here. And I'm really glad to see it being saved and brought back. One thing I don't understand, they said they have to have a eelgrass study to put the boardwalk in. The Coastal Commission.
It's this one here.
Oh, it's that? Oh, okay. I misunderstood. I'm sorry. Because I know you got to have. Why would they make you. Okay. I'm clear on that now. Understand. That's just a little expansion they want to put on their own. Yeah. Understand. Okay.
Mr. Mayor, may I just suggest that you maybe explain what you just described?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, pardon me for that. So on the overhead, I think Eric might be able to point to it as well. You know, as far as the clarification on the boardwalk, there's just one connection from the boardwalk in front of the Gray's Inn that goes over to the Salt Building, and I think it's that corner there that is actually protruding out into the eelgrass area, which is just a little sliver that requires that. So I think that's what we're referring to. Am I getting nodded heads?
Yeah.
Are we nodded heads from Gene back there?
Yeah, it's okay. Because of the Salt Building next door there had to have an ADA lift that's closest to the land at their building on their boardwalk, so that makes the Gray's Inn boardwalk have to do that little
yep.
corner scooch out to be able to get proper access through there.
That's what I don't understand. They have to do it. And why the eelgrass study?
Because it's out over the water.
Yeah.
And it's yet to be determined. I mean,
the Coastal Commission says you have to put it in there, but now, you know, eelgrass. Okay. I get upset at some of these rules. But anyway, glad to see the project going ahead, and looks like it's going to be a really nice salvation of a great place down there.
Thanks, George. Christine?
I agree with George. I would fully support the direction of the leaseholders. I think it's a thoughtful renovation, again, echoing what George has said with to the existing structure. I'm glad it will be retained and necessary upgrades made, and it's always nice to see some ADA access added. I know that's also probably somewhat of a requirement, but it is nice to see those new improvements go in. I appreciate the investment in the water in our waterfront, and I see that you're aware of short-term and long-term improvements, so I'm sure as things get refined, that will become a bigger plan to do this and in what particular year you'll take care of pilings if need be. But it's good to think ahead to 15 and 20 years as well, so you know what. Sometimes we get projects that they perhaps hadn't done that advanced planning, and it's definitely nice to see it on this side. And just really a point of view to mention.
Probably Eric, you can answer this, or Mr. Dougherty. It looks like they're going from 3 units to 2, and is that because of the ADA requirements? Or was I mistaken? There were always just 2. Always 2. Okay.
I'd let the Bastons or Gene Dowdy answer that one. They're the experts on exactly how many units and what they're planning on doing there.
And then while you're there, just one more really quick question.
Good evening. Gene Dowdy, architect for the project. There have always been 3 units. Well, there were 2 units a long, long time ago, but then we built the second story. So there's 2 units downstairs and 1 unit upstairs. And one of the units downstairs, Unit A, will become revising it to ADA accessibility. Any other questions?
Will these be limited to less than 30 days, or will they be vacation-type units, or will they be just nightly?
I believe they're nightly.
Okay. Yes. Just thought I'd check.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gene. Any other questions, Nancy?
That's it.
Noah?
No questions, and I'm also in favor of this. I think this has worked well, and I agree with everything that George and Nancy have said.
Great. There are many good comments on this, and this is a lease and business site, business that has been both an anchor and a destination. It does have good bones, George. So it was, it's great to see something like this, not necessarily reused because it's just being taken care of. The improvements that are going on as far as addressing public access, the harbor walk, the sidewalk improvements, ADA, those are great improvements that I think is supportive of what we'll be doing on the waterfront. So I'm in support of this as well. And with that, I would entertain a motion.
Well, I would move to approve the assignment and assumption agreement and accept the leaseholder's proposal as submitted by approving a consent of landowner form to enable leaseholders to file their proposal applications with the Planning Division.
We have a motion by Christine, a second by George. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Great. Thanks. So, hang on one moment. And hang on, we're catching up here. Moving on to new business, and this is a discussion and consideration of a request for proposal to develop a detailed work plan for the general plan, local coastal plan update, and that would be Mr. Livick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, City Council. Bringing this item before you based on council request. As you know, the city has applied for several kinds of grant funding to update its general plan and local coastal plan, and we have been successful in receiving a $250,000 grant from the combination of the Ocean Protection Council, Coastal Commission, and Coastal Conservancy, and we're working with that group to finalize our work plan and get moving forward on that and execute those contracts. This grant funding will address climate change and sea level rise and its impacts to our local coastal plan, and that will feed into the update of our local coastal plan. It'll also help us to address the rezone of the wastewater treatment plant area and the M1 properties on Atascadero Road that staff was directed to look at for a rezone to visitors serving commercial uses. Stepping back a little bit, our general plan dates from 1982 and our LCP from 88. So we have a fairly dated couple of documents that we would like to bring into the modern era and combine those into one document so that it's concise, easy to follow, and does not have conflicting policies. Staff has developed a outline of a work plan, but what we really need is some additional help to fully flesh out this work plan, put some timeline to it, and some costs to it. Not all the things we'll be able to do in-house with this work plan. Some will require expert advice, for example, when wanted to make sure that there was enough to cover that. I suspect when we get down to it, we're going to probably be in the range of $10,000 to $20,000 for development of this work plan. Based on the consultant billing rates, that would give us somewhere around 2 to 3 weeks of work time on a development of the work plan, which I think is the correct level of effort. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the council may have for me. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for that, Mr. Livick. George, anything? Christine? Nancy, anything?
Well, I have a couple of things, but I'm going to start with what I think is the basis of this. So you're asking for an RFP to have somebody develop a plan so that then we can do the plan. Why not skip that middle piece and go on to developing the plan since we need one so desperately?
What we would like to do is to make sure that we can move this plan forward in an organized and stepwise nature so that we're assured of success. Right now we have an outline for a plan, but we don't have any of the detailed timelines or what additional requirements are necessary, and haven't been able to secure the necessary resources to fully develop that plan.
So we need somebody to write a plan about how to write a plan.
We need to we need to develop the simply stated plan to plan. We're not just going to jump into
a pick an element off the shelf and start writing it when that may not be the most efficient sequence to go into.
As I remember, we spent quite a bit of time several years ago doing that, picking an element and sitting there with the city attorney and working at it and redlining things, because the plan at that point was to submit that to the Coastal Commission just as kind of a sample of testing the waters, then to see if that would give us some direction as where to go. So are we going to do part of it at this time, or are you going to do it all and then wait and see what happens?
I would suspect that we're not going to have the funding to do all of the general plan LCT update at one time, unless we the $1 million comes available again through the Strategic Growth Council. We're going to have to do it a piece at a time. When we were working on the component pieces, I think we picked the recreation and open space element to work on, which is probably one of the easiest elements to work on. When we get to land use and circulation elements, those are much more difficult sections and may not be appropriate for to be edited by committee. We will probably need professional planning help to do that work.
I thought we had professional planners over in your department.
We do, and they are continuing to work on current planning efforts. We do have a fairly high current planning load. We've had a bit of an turnover as of recent with our planning manager departing for other opportunities and one of our assistant planners leaving for sunnier grounds.
Like Hawaii.
We are working on our current planning efforts and have made inroads on long-range planning, such as with our sign ordinance. But this is a very large project. I envision that we would be working in concert with our Coastal Commission staff representatives on rewriting this plan. But I think this first step would be to get a kind of the instruction manual developed for writing the plan, for lack of a better way to phrase that would be to, you know, give us a recipe to write the general plan, and we can go out and do that.
Thank you, which brings me to my second and last question, probably. Under fiscal impact, you talk about $30,000 to be funded by the accumulated general fund maintenance fund. I don't understand why you're using that. When I look at our budget performance report from December 31st, and in public service administration under consulting fees, you had $74,500 left in that little pocket. Why don't you use that money instead of going to the general fund maintenance fund?
We'll go there. Yeah. It is the general plan maintenance fund, which is where the surcharge on building permits goes for the update of the general plan.
All right, beautiful.
And through the mayor, and that charge is specifically to do what is being suggested tonight. It's to revise the general plan throughout the years.
Thank you.
Okay, so then to clarify, make this absolutely perfectly clear, this is not money coming from the general fund. Just the special.
It's a special fund, set aside fund for update of the general plan. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much.
That
does make
I've read
a
that
difference.
Section a bunch of times and I never caught.
Thanks, Nancy. Noah?
Yes, I just had a quick request to Mr. Livick, if you could. We've talked a little bit about the public input component to this and the importance of that. So if you don't mind just briefly reviewing what you've already outlined in the staff report in terms of how you would see the public input and involvement process outside of the council as it proceeds forward.
You know, for the update of the general plan, probably not for this particular item, and I've shuffled my notes pretty well now, so
I need to get back to that section. Okay. We had talked about forming, once we get started on the general plan and LCP update, forming a citizens review committee. I don't think we're quite ready for that point as of yet. In addition to that, we've recently secured some help of the Master Design Studio for a small piece of this, the area around the existing wastewater treatment plant to do some community visioning work. So they'll be holding a couple of workshops for that process before the first council or before the first Planning Commission meeting in May and before the first Planning Commission meeting in June. And all of that public input will feed into the general plan update. But really, the community outreach will start with a general plan LCP review committee. It'll be fed through the Planning Commission and ultimately through council is the way I see that public input working.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank I just a couple brief questions. Because originally when we started this and there was basically a program for this, and I think that's what we were talking about here tonight. If we are able to send this out for an RFP, we'd basically have a professional firm, you know, evaluate all our documents and lay out a work program that identifies the best way to maneuver through this, whether it's one element at a time or which element to start first at a time, but do it in a pretty efficient fashion, and they would be able to evaluate that. Is that, that's kind of the overall?
Exactly. That's what the scope I tried to outline in here is. What they would do is basically give us the recipe for building a general plan LCP. Okay. And something that perhaps that we can have our staff do some of that legwork on and get moving this project forward. Like I've, you know, used the analogy, the parable, you know, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? Well, we're not going to eat the general plan all in one bite. We're going to, without a large funding source, we're going to need to take it on a little bit at a time to move this forward.
Okay. And as far as the $250,000 grant goes, that is a reimbursement as we produce these studies, but where are we at on that, and what's the timeline as far as kind of performance measures on that grant?
So that grant has a 3-year performance period on it. We're just beginning that process with our project manager from the Coastal Conservancy. So we're working on the scope of work that'll be in an RFP, because this is a fairly technical study, sea level rise and assessing climate change. Working on that scope for that RFP that will go out for consulting services for that portion on it. So we're sending documents back and forth to develop that RFP with the Coastal Conservancy staff.
Okay, great. And since we the original work program, as I was reading it from our major goal, city goal number 3, it was the work program at the beginning of the year was to have a halftime person, which was Katie, and that.
Because we will have expenses in the future, and our general plan maintenance fee, not our general fund maintenance fee,
general plan maintenance fee.
General plan maintenance fee. It is a very small surcharge on building permits, so we don't get enough to probably write the complete general plan.
So tonight, if we were to approve this, you're making some suggestions here on maybe different ways we can allocate the funds for this. So do you want to clarify some options?
I guess
there?
An option would be to fund it either through salary savings or existing allocated funds for consultant services, and reserve our general plan maintenance fund for larger expenses when we get to that.
Okay.
So fund it from existing budgetary sources.
Sure. So fund from the existing salary savings and reserve the general plan maintenance fee for another...
Another expenditure in the general plan process.
Okay. Those are all my questions. Nancy, you want to follow up?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, since we're at a point where our staff is really low and we have the savings and we have this money, maybe instead of going out with an RFP, just to hire someone to work in-house dedicated to developing this plan or get it started. Would that be less expensive, perhaps? But it seems that it would be somebody who would be more involved in the total process. They'd be a city employee. I'm sure that they could fill in planning and other things because that would be their area of expertise. But just since we need to hire people anyway, it might be wise to look at hiring someone who would be an expert in developing this plan and have someone here on an ongoing basis.
So basically a contract employee rather than a firm to develop this plan. That would be an option. We didn't have a whole lot of success when we were recruiting for a contract planning manager. So we didn't get very many applicants and for that position, but we can always fly this position again. We have to be very careful with that person. I think we have a tendency to use them for things that maybe we didn't intend them because of the immediate need. Always current planning seems to grab a lot of time from people in the office. Somebody wants their project, an answer on their project right now.
Of course.
They don't really care about what our general plan looks like. They need an answer on their project right now. We would basically need to kind of lock this person in a room and not throw away the key.
That was my thought, exactly, yes. Hire a person specifically to do this and then lock them in the room somewhere in the back of the building. And
yeah.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Leibig.
Noah, you had some comments?
I guess Mr. Leibig just answered my question, but it was in terms of, I'm wondering if you'd just like us to, because this is a relatively small expense for a very important work product, would you like us to give you some leeway in both the fund, you know, based on your comment about existing budgetary sources, that's some leeway there so you can really be strategic about that, and then also with, you know, the framework of consultants, firm versus in-house consultants. So would that be easier for you? What gives you the best chance to make those decisions as you're pursuing this?
Well, I guess what a strategy could be, I'll just kind of speak off the cuff, we could fly a contract position again and see if there's a response for this kind of specialty type of work. I think we need not so much the person like we have now who's very experienced in current planning. We need somebody experienced in long-range planning, and we didn't get that response when we last flew a temporary position. Not to say that circumstances haven't changed in the world and there might be that person out there now. I think we could do that fairly quickly and know that if we needed to go to consultant after that. And maybe if council wanted to give us the latitude, staff the latitude of first trying the in-house approach.
To my left or to my right?
Yeah, I'll jump in there. I'm really glad to see this because it has been an ongoing need that we really haven't been successful with when I look historically at the city's attempts to update the general plan. And as you mentioned, 1982 is a long time past, and this is long overdue. So we do need to focus, and we've identified this in the goals as a top priority. So I'm thinking to myself, because of the complexity of this process, and as I looked at the different priorities and how to manage this, I could see how this sort of a roadmap is really important for us to be able to stay on track as councils change and potential staff changes and so forth, and be able to ensure success and then progress. So I think this is an important step. I'm definitely in favor of giving you the leeway with where the funds come from within the existing budgetary sources. And I think in terms of the in-house contractor versus a firm, I find myself, because this is a fairly modest work load, it's very focused, it's specific, it's kind of strategic and surgical, actually. My thought would be the firm would probably be the quickest, cleanest way to go, and then we look at that in-house element and then maybe have the firm help us evaluate, you know, what's the most efficient way for us to allocate funds and our resources as we go forward from there. So unless Mr. Livick feels really strongly that you think there'd be a lot of value for us to keep open both options for you, and I'm willing to go there, I'm finding myself leaning more towards the firm approach just to keep the progress going and not get too delayed in these different options.
Nancy?
I would like to see us look, of course, at the idea of the possibility of hiring a consultant, a contract employee who could be an ongoing part of this project, who could get the roadmap started and then get locked in a back room someplace, as Mr. Livick suggested, which is probably very important. But I know he needs some latitude in this, so I would like him to at least consider that yet, then in the end do what he needs to do to get this project moving.
Thank you. George? Any comments? You're good? Okay. Christine?
Thank you. I appreciate the discussion tonight, and thank you so much for bringing this forward this evening. I know we wanted to get it here for quite some time. So this, for me, is very clear-cut decision. I looked at our major city goal number 3, and our objective, what we said we will do, is to update plans for current and future land use needs. So our goal, our third goal that we all as a council agreed was high priority. The only two goals higher are the WRF project and the streets. This is our third priority goal, to update the plans for the current and future land use. This is what we agreed to at our goal time. Under that, we simply say develop a strategy and the resources to complete an update of the general plan and local coastal plan. And if you go further down on the goal sheet, action plan, under number 3, action plan, key task F, develop work plan for the update of the general plan and the LCP. So we laid this out at our goal time. So I'm fully supportive moving forward. I think that given the load in the public services department, bringing in professionals who do this for a living all over California, knock it out, get it done, and then move forward with our next task on the general plan. So I think absolutely right. We need, this is the, let's get the chef in to give us the recipe. I think I'll follow along with Mr. Livick. So I'm fully ready to support this tonight.
Thank you for that. And so my comments on this, obviously I've been in support of updating our general plan and LCB for some time. And, I echo your comments on our goal. Throughout this process, we've been, we have made strides to have a program to go through and make that recipe, have that out there so we can start stepping through that process. I would be in agreement with the firm, the contract firm, to do that, the surgical approach, if you will, specifically because I think what we have, with a firm, you will have experts. So you will have someone that's more expert in land use. Hopefully, we would be able to get that kind of expertise where they can really kind of combine their knowledge and skill and really get through all the documents, which are really there's quite a bit to get through. And that that kind of approach would really drill down and narrow everything down into what's the best way to get through that. And I think once we get that, then we can have that work program on the table.
Horizon?
We have hired a contract planner that has quite a bit of experience in planning. Unfortunately, I can't convince her to unretire and take a permanent job. And we have flown the position for planning manager, so that is out there being advertised. So if anybody listening that has a master's in planning and an AICP, please apply here at Morro Bay. The deadline is May the 9th.
Or you might come up with a home run. Solve both your problems.
Thanks for that, George. Okay, I would entertain a motion at this time. Unless if I don't have any, I'll entertain a motion myself.
I'll make a motion. I just wanted to do a follow-up comment on George's comments, and I think it's not an either-or scenario. I'm confident that Mr. Lavick's working to get the day-to-day activities of the planning department up to speed, and that this is a concurrent effort to make sure that we're looking long-range and getting this general plan update moving, or keeping it moving. And for that, I find myself very attracted to the firm approach just for this, the contracting firm. Mr. Lavick, do you have any last comments on that? Would you really appreciate some leeway here for that decision, or for that one component?
You're on the spot.
Honestly.
Well, the staff report does request an RFP.
It'd be easier on our staff if we didn't have another person in-house that to work on this. I don't, based on our last recruitment for part-time help, we weren't very successful in getting this level of a planning applicant. What we need is a subject area expert, but not in just one subject area of planning. There's many elements. So that's the advantage of a firm would have. They can rely on their transportation planners to speak to the circulation element. They can talk to their environmental planners on the environmental aspects of the LCP general plan. So we can do it with contract staff. I think it would be most beneficial to, or most efficient, to use outside services in this case.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Lavick. And with that, I'll make a motion that we authorize staff to utilize existing budgetary sources and to issue an RFP and award a contract for the development of a detailed work plan for the general plan / local coastal plan updates in accordance with the city's consultant hiring policy.
Second. So a motion by Noah, second by Jamie. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
I had some discussion.
Discussion?
Thank you. I was just going to say that while I am still in favor of finding qualified staff as a consultant who could start and then continue this project so that it's more seamless, that would be my choice, my favorite thing. But in the spirit of building consensus and getting this moving, I will vote yes on the motion.
Thank you, Nancy. Any other comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Thank you. Moving on to item D2. Item D2 is Morro Bay Fishing Community Sustainability Plan Review, Acceptance, and Direction on Plan Recommendations. Mr. Endersby. That's always a mouthful. Not the Mr. Endersby part, but the Morro Bay Fishing Community Sustainability Plan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and good evening again. First, I have an acronym disclaimer. I'm going to try not to use acronyms. One that will continue to come up that's a lot easier to say because the Morro Bay Fishing Community Sustainability Plan gets my tongue all tied up. So what we're referring to is the Fishing Community Sustainability Plan, the CSP for short.
CSP.
I may say plan, but that's what I'm referring to. So there's a lot of acronyms. I'll try not to use them, and I'm going to try and be as brief as possible. So the CSP effort here is part of a larger city and community effort to establish and participate in the groundfish trawl individually transferable quota ITQ program via a community fishing association. Morro Bay and Monterey received a grant to jointly produce these plans for their communities. The CSP, the plan here, is not specific to that one fishery. It's really a strategic planning and budgeting and implementation tool for the entire community and for the fishing industry. But it's a good offshoot from that effort for us to take a good look at ourselves in the mirror and see what we're doing and what the priorities are and where we may want to go. So we're asking for council acceptance of this plan. By acceptance, that may be kind of not the right word. It's really affirmative.
Morro Bay commercial fishing industry. While this is a discrete project with a discrete timeline and discrete budget, we've really had the opportunity to draw on our findings, our work in the commercial fishing industry here in Morro Bay since 2004. So the work is in some ways a culmination of the work that has gone before us. As Eric said, the city as lead, the city of Morro Bay as lead, in late 2011 applied for a National Fish and Wildlife Fisheries Innovation Fund grant. It's a very competitive process. There was about $1.5 million rewarded to about 18 communities around the country, Alaska, the Gulf States, the West Coast, the East Coast as well. So it was a very competitive grant, and Morro Bay and Monterey fared extremely well there. The grant directed us, and the community also directed us, to take a very comprehensive approach to assessing the commercial fishing industry and how it fits into the working waterfronts and its implications for the greater community. So we looked at the economic, social, and environmental settings in which the commercial fishing industry operates, and based our plan on that approach. We also infrastructure and services were very important to the community of Morro Bay, so we actually made that an individual chapter, where in Morro Bay or Monterey, rents and wharfages was a focus for them, and that was set aside as a specific chapter. If there are any takeaways from this presentation or this project, I think they can be summarized fairly succinctly. Number one, our community is extremely capable in planning strategically, forming alliances, and raising funds to achieve their goals, something the commercial fishing industry is often criticized for. It's not the case in Morro Bay. Number two, our community has taken an active and substantive role in decisions that impact their industry, as is evidenced by this plan and our presence in regulatory meetings. This is considered a hallmark of sustainability. Number three, this industry plays a major role in the economics of the city. Between 1990 and 2012, over $125 million have been landed at our docks in Morro Bay. And between 2008 and 2011, 2012, we generated 12 new jobs in this industry. So during the worst recession in history, we had 12 new entrants come into the commercial fishing industry and 17 new boats. Our methods for this project were similar to our methods in other projects. It relied heavily on input from the commercial fishing industry, directly from the fishermen, stakeholders, business owners. We spoke to each member of the city council, NGOs, and business leaders. We also drew from state, federal, local, and regulatory archives, and there were anthropologists, ethnographers, economists, experts in finance and distribution systems on our team. So our key findings, we start with critical infrastructure and services. Commercial fishing industry cannot survive without key critical infrastructure and services. And despite downturns between the 1990s and the mid-2000s, where landings went from between $6 and $9 million a year to a low in 2007 of $1.7 million, we're actually back up to those levels of the 1990s in the last couple of years, over a 400% increase. But Morro Bay has managed to hang on to some of their major key infrastructure, like state-of-the-art ice machine, a working fuel dock, our launch ramp, dry storage, gear repair. We have four offloading facilities with forklifts and totes, hoists, sufficient vehicle access, a well-dredged harbor, processing about 15 miles away, ship supply store, bait and baiting services. There are several items such as a boatyard and cold storage or and deep freeze that are seen as lacking, and these are addressed in our recommendations. In terms of the economic setting, one of the most significant economic contributions that our commercial fishing industry makes here in Morro Bay is synergies with the county's $1.2 billion tourist industry. Opinion polls from 2007 and 2008 identified the importance of having the importance to tourism of having a working waterfront, and civic leaders and tourism professionals in Crescent City, Morro Bay, and Monterey rated having a working waterfront as 8.8 setting. In 2009, there was a journal article in the journal Science where 19 leading fisheries biologists concluded that after assessing 10 ecosystems around the world, that management measures in California were one among the most successful in increasing fishery abundance above the long-term average. So our commercial fishermen are some of the most heavily regulated in the world, if not the most heavily regulated in the world. Of the tens of thousands of species off our coast, the 25 or so that are targeted by our commercial fleet are overseen by state, federal, and sometimes state and federal management measures that include temporal closures, seasonal closures, gear restrictions, size and sex restrictions, quota, limited entry, and our swordfish fishermen are even restricted in what time of the day they can deploy and pull their nets. In terms of the social setting, Morro Bay is probably one of the most capable communities that we've worked in up and down the coast, and we've worked in all of the major commercial fishing ports in California. The community's ability to self-organize and participate in the management process, particularly in issues that impact them. If you will recall that when PG&E was planning seismic testing off the coast, our community was able to rally and oppose it very, very effectively. The MBCFO, the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization, has been representing the fleet, fishermen, fishing families since 1972. Membership, between 2008 and 2012, membership doubled in that organization. I think that's another hallmark of resilience and sustainability and performance. The Central Coast Women for Fisheries has raised over $100,000 and distributed over 85 fishing heritage scholarships in the community. So you just... These are very significant findings. The plan culminated in recommendations. Some of the recommendations are already the issues already go ongoing, like addressing sea level change in the update of the LCP, the community quota fund, and what is needed in those particular recommendations. Continuing civic support from the community. Other recommendations. Need technical support and financial support, such as the boatyard. So just to summarize the 10 key issues, and one of the things that, as we started this project, the fishermen were very clear that they wanted us to focus on things that could be done, things that could be built. So we don't have a laundry list here. We've condensed our recommendations down to 10 key issues. And what we would basically asking the city council to consider here is that this is these are directives from the fishing community. We just wrote the report. The fishermen directed us on every level. So our recommendations include, and I'm summarizing, a boatyard, the fuel dock, refrigerated deep freeze storage, continued participation in the management process, berths and slips, processing, commercial fish processing, vehicle access, sea level rise, and it's a living document, it's a working document. We think it should be used as a benchmark against which to compare our performance from year to year and maybe change in policy and change in regulation. So as a living document, we feel that it's important that it be reviewed on a regular basis and updated on a regular basis. That's as brief as I could take. 2 years of work and $190,000. So look forward to your questions and comments.
Thank you. Thanks for being at the ready. We'll bring it back to council. If
Great.
You have any more questions, we'll have you come back. And do you want to exchange? I'll look to my right here to start off with questions, and then we'll open it up for public comment in a minute.
Okay. Thank you. I'll lead off. There's a couple questions. I'll get into comments, obviously, after public comment. But I was curious about with the baitfish situation, Mr. Endersby. Within the report, it talks about Morro Bay Landing filling a void that was existing. So are you comfortable with that? It seems like we're satisfied there. Is there a need to affirm that we could utilize additional baitfish opportunities?
You're correct. The Morro Bay Landing with Bob Fowler operating that, he's built the receivers. He's got them out. He's just waiting for the season to get going and working in conjunction with the Billy Boy and the fellow that's operating that, getting bait. So I think that is going to get us back to having live bait in the bay and should take care of that problem.
Great. Excellent news. Mr. Hackelman's comments were basically that we probably should focus on discussing that deeper and identifying that as, you know, overall everything seems to be trending up, but that is a key area where we may need to focus and do some strategizing. Do you have any response to that? I thought that was a pretty important comment that he made.
Yeah, I'm probably going to throw Henry back under the bus on that one.
Okay.
Or Rick Algert, really drill down on it. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts on the sable fish, and it's related to the quota system and open access and lots of things going on. I'm not sure how much input or influence we can have on it.
Yeah, and if I could just maybe focus it in, I think it speaks to the larger concern of how can we, and just working towards local control as much as possible and access, but also there was an underlying concern that I hear from some of the fishermen about ensuring within the quota opportunities that we receive or going into the future, how to make sure that it's fair and equal access to those resources across the board from the different parties at play.
Yeah, thank you. Great question, and we're really pleased that Owen chimed in. You know, ITQ or the quota program, the federal program, is a huge moving beast, and it's here whether anybody wanted it or not. And I think there are some things that we can, that the community can do and that we're doing. I think some of the most effective are the formation of a community quota fund where decision making on who gets access to the resource stays in the community, and access to the resource is secured in the community. Some of the other issues that the community of Morro Bay is engaged in is moving forward this in a quest to reduce cost for fishermen, moving forward on the use of electronic monitoring as opposed to 100% observer coverage. So I think the community is engaged in several issues now that are some of the best, that are the best responses that we have. In terms of Owen, in terms of the statements on the loss in that fishery, we don't diminish that at all. I think it's clearly demarcated, or it's clearly illustrated in the report what the declines were in that fishery last year. I think from a resiliency perspective, from a triple bottom line perspective, to see a drop in a $2.5 million drop in one fishery and only see a $1 million, a little over $1 million drop in the entire fishery as fishermen shifted to crab and salmon. We had one of the best crab seasons, one of the best salmon seasons we had for a while. And then to see the squid pump out there, to see the community engaged in squid and sardine. So we've got an ability to move into fisheries when the opportunities arise, and we've got a great diversity of fisheries on which we rely. So that drop, we didn't experience a $2.5 million drop from year to year. That drop was buffered. I think from a resiliency and durability perspective, that's probably the most significant.
Okay, thank you. Then my last question was to Mr. Endersby in regards to there. We received an email from Fishline regarding their proposal to help satisfy the marketing and services and so forth. Do you have any comments about that? It seems like within the report here, we've left the door open to make strategic decisions, and those will be made as we see will be most efficient for our funds and so forth. You think that's addressed inherently, or did you want to try to address that even more specifically tonight?
Thank you for the question. In general, you know, we've got the promotion and marketing, one of the recommendations, and that's where his comments fit in. I think, you know, I have received a proposal from him and haven't, you know, gone to do any work or sat down with him at this point yet, but it is part of the whole marketing and promotion plan, and I think can fit in, and if we can see if there's a way to fit him in. If it becomes a budget thing, obviously it we require council approval if we have some sort of a budget amendment or work it into a budget to try and participate in his what he brought forward.
So it wasn't specifically cited as one of the options, but it is a tool that you may think is worthwhile recommending or not.
Yeah, I think so. The plan, I think, you know, with it, in particular to promotion and marketing, where there's not, you know, there's things we're doing and things we should do. Things we can do, and I think that's just sort of, I guess, one of the tools, possible tools in the toolbox would be one way of putting it.
All right, great, thanks.
Dan, see any questions? None? How about you, George?
No questions.
Christine?
Yes, thanks. I had a simple question about the plan itself. It's actually a great, considering we were just talking about item D1 and about planning, this is a good follow-up because it's an example of great planning and bringing stakeholders together.
National Fish and Wildlife Foundation.
Okay, so what's the status of that grant?
Once we do, there's still some outstanding reimbursements to that, but once we get this done and Henry and Rick finish their work, that grant gets closed out and it's fully expended.
And then how does that relate, if at all, to the Morro Bay Quota Fund?
The Morro Bay Community Quota Fund was put together through a community city effort working with the Nature Conservancy, TNC, with some grant funding that they were able to leverage to get Rick Algert on the city's payroll to start putting that together and putting you know, the board of directors and bylaws and all that together. So, like I said, the CSP is a related item that came out of that whole Community Fishing Association effort, and that effort is winding down as well. The board is up and running. It's got a board of directors I just got elected on last week, and it's up and running, and they're in the process of acquiring the quota from the Nature Conservancy. They're working out the final details on that, and their funding for that, their loan funding for that. So once that's up and running and they get that quota, they're going to be up and leasing it and starting to hopefully get fishermen to lease it and put that quota back to work.
Okay, and then you will be the city's connector between this fund, or excuse me, this plan, the CSP, and the implementation in many ways would be working in collaboration with Morro Bay Community Quota Fund. Is that true?
The Morro Bay Community Quota Fund, the Fishermen's Organization, other entities, you know, the promotion and marketing, the fellows that Noah spoke about earlier, all the different aspects of it, yes, we will be the conduit to realizing all those different and wonderful things in the plan.
Okay, great. I'm trying to make sure that what I think a lot of municipalities have are great plans that then go on a shelf, and in 5 years somebody dusts them off and says, oh, why didn't we just follow this plan? We paid for it and we didn't. So I'm just trying to ensure that we don't lose track of this kind of high quality work and that we're able to follow through with it. So then I should look for you at some point during the budget time, because that's another way we prioritize, right, by putting dollars to it. So I would think that from the Harbor Department, some of the prioritizing, if we don't get too detailed tonight, would come from through your budget process, bringing things to council. These are, if you're following through on any of the recommendations, and we would probably see that at the budget time.
Yeah, absolutely. Through that, through bringing things back to the Harbor Advisory Board, if we need to drill down more, you know, as Henry said, it's a living document. We'd anticipate looking at this thing at least annually. A lot of the items and elements we're already working on, you know, infrastructure, pier, ice machine, all that stuff is all elements that we're currently working on. and current council and past council direction for decades in supporting the commercial fishing industry, continuing on with that. You know, like I said earlier, it's kind of an affirmation of a lot of these things for us to keep doing what we've been doing.
Okay, great. Those are my questions. Thank you.
Thanks. As far as getting down into the details, you know, I just had one question on page 50 of the report, and it has to do with the aquaculture and Morro Bay working waterfront. And considering a recent tour to the abalone farm, I was just wondering if it wouldn't be prudent to include some sort of language that identified the abalone farm as a potential in the working waterfront of Morro Bay. I know they've expressed, you know, some interest in this area, be it the power plant or other properties, if that were the case. So as far as identifying that in the language of this plan, would this be the time to consider that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that fits into, you know, what we talked about earlier, you know, a comment versus an implementation action. I think, you know, if that's the council's wish to recognize that as a potential, as obviously, I mean, it's not Morro Bay specific, but it's a sterile bay, and the potential of that farm having some sort of an arm or some sort of an activity here in Morro Bay, council could certainly recognize that. And as I we talked earlier, as a comment to the plan, as an attachment to the plan, kind of like the Owen Hackelman's and the other comments, council wishing to recognize that, and the council does recognize that, I think that would be the appropriate place for that.
Yeah. Mr. Pontarelli, did you want to respond to that question at all? Are you okay?
I think Eric. Thank you, Mayor, Council. I think Eric answered it pretty well. But I was under the impression that abalone need a lot of flushing and certain water conditions and distance from marinas, that our bay was really well suited for growing oysters. So, I think the Ocean Rose, one of the boat that harvests the kelp for the abalone farm, ties up in our harbor and uses our well-dredged harbor and our facilities to tie up, and so it is part of this working waterfront.
Am I already on here?
Yeah, please state your name, Alan.
Okay. My name's Alan Oward. I live in Cambria. I'm a secretary of the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization, and I'm on the Harbor Advisory Board, and I'm on the Boatyard Ad Hoc Committee. And I'd just like to say the fishermen are totally in support of this. We're really pleased to have this community sustainability plan. It's been a huge boost for us, just something we would never have really thought of on our own, yet now we can see this is all great. The ideas are well thought out. We're glad to see the anthropological, if you will, input that's often missing. And I just wanted to say that the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization is taking an ongoing survey, and we're trying to prioritize those things that require new infrastructure so that we can spend the money wisely in the way that's most needed. Thank you.
All right, Alan, thanks. Anybody else for public comment? Seeing none, I'll close public comment and come back to council. And I think at this time, we really, you know, it's just a matter of, we have some recommendations on where we're going with this tonight, and we have some alternatives, but, you know, I would hope everybody is willing to accept this tonight, so we could probably rule out number three, which is do not accept the plan, and then basically work off of options and alternates number one and two, and that would be any other kind of implementation or comments that we'd like incorporated into this. And I guess for the sake of discussion, my comments in regard to, you know, abalone, if that's language that could be, you know, easily incorporated in there, at least it identifies it, you know, no harm, no foul. If something like this were to, you know, identified in the plan, you know, certainly it could be, you know, part of something that opens up some opportunity. Is there any, you know, I think just looking for feedback on that, Eric?
Yeah, I think if that's the sense of council, if we do want to include that, we spoke, you know, the kelp harvesting already does have a tie in the Morro Bay. Yeah. So, yeah, we can incorporate it in the comments. And
so, you know, in addition, we also have, you know, to discuss in the staff report, there's the boat haul-out facility and the Harbor Advisory Board and the feasibility study. So I know that's a small component of this the staff report. It might be helpful to break this down into two separate motions tonight. And if we, you know, just concentrate on the plan and get through that motion, and then maybe we can discuss a motion on the haul-out facility and prioritizing some of the recommendations. So you were looking for some comments there, Noah?
Yeah, I did want to follow up on the on your suggestion about the aquaculture and the inclusion of the abalone farm, which I absolutely agree with. And I think it's important for us to be able to keep track of the need there for potential hosting of an expansion of the farm. The main primary need, and it should be referenced in the report so we're able to identify and take advantage of opportunities as they come forward, is they need fresh ocean water intake and outfall. That's the limiting factor that makes Morro Bay attractive, whether it's through the city's resources related to the wastewater treatment facility or with the power plant itself. So to me, that those details would be important to be drawn out in the plan. So going forward, we're keeping track of those opportunities as they come up. And it wouldn't be actual within the ocean, but growing beds as they do out there at the farm itself.
Is that pretty well captured, Eric, for you?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Well, just one thing about the abalone plant. There's a reason why they built that plant so far up, well, away from everything. Abalone are very sensitive to any type of pollution. I mean, they just die right now. And I think in an area like Morro Bay, there's a possibility for that. That's why they're up where they are. They're all by themselves up there. I can't even imagine that they'd be interested in coming into this area. But I don't know all about the abalone. I was in the abalone business for years, as you know, and I know that abalones are very, very sensitive to things like that.
Thanks, George. Christine?
I guess I'm kind of confused, but they do want to come here? Is this what I hear you saying?
They express interest potential. I think it's just prudent to include the language in there. It's, you know, nothing to get into the weeds over.
We let them figure it out, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, yeah, I think I would be supportive of including it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are we talking only about abalone now, or may I is it open discussion?
Open discussion.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so I just will focus right now on the plan itself. When I was reading it, I realized, wow, I want to recommend to residents in Morro Bay who don't have any family in the fishing industry or aren't fishermen or women themselves, that this report gives you a great understanding of what the industry is doing here in Morro Bay. And I think it's well worth your time to read it.
I would entertain making a motion right now, and I've got something drafted. I would work up right now, and I'd make the motion that we accept the plan as presented, with the recommended changes as discussed in the aquaculture the comments, and the language to identify the potential expansion and as discussed, and to include the specific sites that might be a potential. And I think we spoke to that as far as the wastewater treatment plant or power plant, if that's area. And then also in that motion to direct staff to review this document annually with the Harbor Advisory Board and for suggesting to update this plan and for implementation and forward any recommendations on to council, and that would be done on an annual basis. And that would be the motion.
Second.
Oops. So we have a motion by Jamie and a second by Noah. Any discussion? Seeing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. And then perhaps the second item to discuss is the harbor, the boat haul-out facility. And so just to be clear on that discussion, we have it in a, I just want to wrap up some things here. On the, this has been proceeding with the Harbor Advisory Board and the boat haul-out subcommittee. And Eric, I don't know if you want to speak to that specifically, but just to give us an overview on this, but we have had the recommendation from our subcommittee and our Harbor Advisory Board on participating in partnership with basically a feasibility study on a boat haul out facility. And the agreement is there's some grant funds out there, and the city would be into it for half of that. And can you be specific on the proposal and the feasibility and the cost?
Just briefly, before we go down this road, may I ask a question of our city attorney? Since the discussion of the feasibility and the location of the boat haul out is not on our agenda tonight, does that have to be a future agenda item? It sounds to me like we're straying away from the report.
I think there's sufficient information in the item that was on the agenda and the report, which specifically talks about a set of guidelines or a set of goals, and one of the goals specifically is the haul out facility.
Thanks, Nancy. Eric?
Yeah, thank you. The second half of my spiel kind of was going to speak to that. This is a little water under the bridge, but in March 6th, the Harbor Advisory Board did vote unanimously to recommend the council approve this plan. Also at the March 6th meeting, the Harbor Advisory Board voted unanimously to recommend the City Council allocate $32,000 towards the proposed Lisa Wise Consulting feasibility, market feasibility, and siting study that they had proposed to the Commercial Fishermen's Organization. The Commercial Fishermen's Organization, or CFO, was awarded a $30,000 grant from the Cable Committee to partially fund that, with the hopes that the city would partner up, you know, kind of arm in arm, hand in hand, and help complete that financial study. Since then, the Fishermen's Organization and Lisa Wise Consulting have kind of refined that plan and broken it into two parts. Phase one being more of a market analysis and financial analysis of, you know, what's your market look like, how many boats would you expect, for how long, and potentially how much would it make. And then the second phase would be the actual siting study. In other words, what areas are good for haul out location, what areas would be good for boat yard, and then stitch all that together. The ad hoc committee, as you know, we had a meeting a couple 3 weeks ago, and they're recommending that the city participate in this financial feasibility study and the siting study as well. We do have, I think a couple council meetings ago we spoke about this, we do have $65,000 in change in our currently approved budget for the boatyard haul-out facility. That's a remnant that's been in our capital project budget since this activity on the boatyard ceased in, what, the early 2000s, maybe early to mid-2000s when we were working on this in earnest earlier. With that, you know, we're looking for direction, at least since the boatyard's a pretty hot topic right now and it's in our recommendations. That's why we brought it forward as an item of discussion here, and if we can get any council direction on that item. And then other things, like I said earlier, I'm not looking for implementation recommendations on direction on all 10. That'll be a living document, and as things come up and priorities show themselves, we'll work on those.
Thanks, Eric. And so the first,
and just yes, to be clear, you'd be giving direction to bring back to you a contract to, or an agreement to enter into with someone to do what he just suggested.
Okay. Thanks. So, Eric, on this then, the first phase of that proposal is the feasibility study, and I might not have heard you when you were saying
project, and then get deeper into the questions of where and what size and so on and so forth.
Yeah, exactly. I think once the report was completed, we'd bring that, probably the Harbor Advisory Board would be a good place to bring it first, get their take on it, and then bring it to council and see what the findings are.
Nancy?
It seems almost silly to ask this, but I'm going to anyway. We're talking about the financial aspect of this. I think if you're going to bring this back to look at, one of the things I hear from fishing people all the time are the environmental impacts in this day and age of building a boat haul out. And I think before we talk about whether it's going to be profitable or not, we need to go back, whoever does this, and maybe they're planning on doing it, but it just seems to me that there are probably some pretty strict environmental concerns just from what I've heard out in the fishing community in terms of developing a boat haul out today rather than maybe 20 or 30 years ago.
Absolutely. That's probably one of the reasons some of the boatyards over the last decade have gone out of business, because they just can't or won't comply with some of those regulations. I think for what we're looking at here, the phase one, the market analysis and financial feasibility, is a snapshot of what your projected customers are going to look like and potential projected revenue. Once that part is done, assuming it looks relatively positive and it's not, you know, like I said earlier, you know, 10 boats and, you know, $10,000 worth of revenue a year, if it looks somewhat financially feasible, then you stitch that together with the second part, the siting, because obviously if you have you've got X amount of dollars in revenue this boatyard can make, but the boatyard operator, whatever that is, whether that's the city or an independent operator, has to buy land, acquire it, plan it, permit it, build it. That looks very different than the possibility of a boatyard operator that comes in and is handed a yard in and of itself and ready to go. So that's the bigger picture. That's phase two in terms of where it might go, where the haul out ways would go, where the actual boatyard would go, what property it may go on, and what then stitch the two together and then see if it makes sense from the more global perspective.
And I guess it's the permitting process and the availability of permits or the possibility of even getting permits for this that are the thing that concerns me the most first up front.
Well, I mean, obviously coastal development permit and coastal commission and regional water. Coastal dependent uses are high, obviously, on coastal commission's checklist, and a boatyard is very coastal dependent. It's meant to ensure that vessels are complying with best management practices. One of the issues we have with some of our bigger boats and some of the derelict boats we end up with is getting them out of the water and doing something with them. And with a boatyard, with some of these bigger boats we've had over the years that have become problems, we could have gotten them out. If we had a bigger yard, we could have gotten them out of the water and at least stopped that immediate threat. So I think in terms of environmentally, it's a much more environmentally sound way of managing a harbor if you can have a boatyard and get your boats hauled out. And, you know, and guys now with the bigger boats, they're having to go up to Moss Landing or further down into Santa Barbara or Venturium further. And you know, you talk about the carbon footprints and all that kind of stuff. You know, what's the more, I guess, environmentally sound way to do it? If we can do it here, we can do it here.
No?
Yeah, thank you. Just to follow up to that, so the permitting analysis would be included in that second phase.
Yeah, I would envision that phase two is going to look at those bigger issues.
Okay, and then in terms of that first financial feasibility, that would also include recreational boats as well, not just solely the commercial element.
Yeah, absolutely.
The full picture,
yes.
Coast Guard, so on and so forth.
All the above.
Okay, great, thanks.
Thanks, Noah. Christine?
Oh, thank you. Yes, I did. I'm sorry, George, would you like to speak before? Do you want me to go, and then do you want to follow? Would you like to speak first? Okay.
I'm really anxious to hear what you're going to say.
You probably know. Oh, well, I have been on record earlier in discussions about the boatyard, a marine facility here. We're calling it boatyard and haul out. So I'm happy to see, and it's the reason I was supportive of it at all is because we have had it recommended to us numerous years by the waterfront community. And in this case, we see not only is it a recommendation in this plan that was brought forward and that we just passed tonight, it's the number one recommendation. So I don't know if that was shuffled around based on what we've been talking about recently, but there it is again. So for me, it would be best if we could accommodate the financial share
capital budget that's in the currently approved budget.
Okay, and then I think for also a refresher of what has been happening in this with this boatyard / haul out project in the report, in the plan that we just approved tonight, it gives a very nice historical overview of the steps the community has taken, and it does look like twice perhaps it just sort of stopped, that it wasn't picked up again, and then it was picked up again, and really, I guess at the end of the day, it was an environmental issue, and then that would be a land acquisition issue too, because the land we had available wasn't deemed appropriate. So all of these things have been a big question mark. So I'd like to see us resolve it, and but I'm also concerned about the timing it would take to resolve it. So, Mr. Endersby, do you have any idea, or maybe Mr. Pontarelli has an idea of what would be the timing for phase one?
I believe the proposal brings things winding up about November. Does that sound right, Henry?
Henry, can you come up to the mic?
Sorry.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mayor, Council. We had estimated 8 months for from start to finish, come up with, you know, the first phase, we had broken the project up in two phases, like fatal flaws analysis. So we had about $65,000 in a fatal flaw analysis. We were going to look at market demand, look at feasibility, look at placement. We're going to get some of the environmental firms to come out and look for fatal flaws. The second phase, or the third phase, was going to be going for a coastal development permit. That was, you know, that's separate and distinct. But this phase is looking at, is there demand? Is it financially feasible? Are there any fatal flaws with environmental, whether it be red-legged lizards or eelgrass, frogs, excuse me. Lizards don't have red legs.
Okay.
So it's, 8 months maximum. We could probably compact that and get started really more quickly, come up with primary recommendations.
Okay,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, so that's where I stand.
Okay.
Is that clear? Thanks. George?
Well, first of all, I want to make it real clear that I love our fishermen. I mean, I've been around the fishing business all my life. I started off as a young boy just riding in my mother's boat as she pulled the oyster barge along. And I've been around fishing all my life, like I said. And I can't even imagine why we're even going down this road. I bet you if we would bring up a guy like from Ventura Haul Out Boatyard up here to speak and tell us what it all involves, we would be just amazed what they have to go through. I was also, I had a boat called the Tiger's Folly here. I had to haul it down to Ventura all the time. Sure, it would have been nice if it was here. But I had to go down there because they had all the facilities for to fix the rudders and fix the shafts and do all that work. And if you just went down there, I don't know if anybody's been down there to look at that, what it details. But it's enormous. And like Nancy said, the environmental thing is tremendous. I mean, the cost of just scraping a boat off and getting the taking the stuff and putting it into a holding tank and then have to truck it away and things like that. We don't even know what it's all about. We need an expert up here. If we even thought about it, why spend this money? Have a guy come up and tell us what it's all about before we even get involved in this, because I think we're just throwing money away. We got Avila Beach down there. They're trying to run an operation. I don't see why we don't join up with them and try to help them. And they just got, I think, $250,000 to dredge out their area and to do some work down there. The money spent down there to help them to get that would be great. They're there, and that isn't very far away. Most of our boats can make it down there. So I just... like I said, I love the fishermen. I want the best for them, but I think this is a project. It's already been studied many, many times, and it's always came up short. It just doesn't work. And like I say, I hate to be the one to throw a damper on it, but I really think this has not been thought through very well.
Thanks for that, George. Which leads to another question. So, Eric, would you think that this feasibility...
It's important for us to do that. We do have some remainder funds that are earmarked for this sort of effort. So I think it's a, and we're getting matching resources from the Cable Liaison Committee. So I'm in support of it. I'm looking forward to addressing it and either moving on or closing it.
I have one more question for Mr. Pannoni, and that was initially you said that it's one thing in our motion that we would have to bring this back for approval for council. So in any motion we make, it's not to just go ahead and approve this part of it, but we would have it brought back to council for approval.
What you'd be directing staff to do is come back with an agreement to accomplish what you want to accomplish.
Okay. Is there not something that we can do that under the consultant policy? Is that
our consultant selection policy allows for the city manager to authorize contracts up to $175,000. Yeah. Anything above that would have to go to council for approval. But there is a process set up in that consultant selection.
I understand that, but because of the nature of the specifics that you're being requested to do tonight, those specifics weren't on the agenda. The general idea of the plan was on the agenda, and the plan included the haul-out facility
discussion. I understand. Thanks. Okay. With that, I'll go ahead and make a motion or attempt at a motion, see how we do with this. And I would make a motion that the City Council recognize the Harbor Advisory Board and the Boat Haul Out Ad Hoc Committee recommended to partner and fund 50% of the Boat Haul Out Feasibility Study as proposed by Lisa Wise Consultant, and the City Council authorize direct staff to come back with an agreement to approve that feasibility study and contract.
Second for discussion.
Okay, we have a motion by Jamie, a second by Christine. Discussion?
Well, I will be voting no on this because I think it's just throwing money away. It just seems like we've got it there, so we got to use it for something. And this has been done too many times. I think there should be a different kind of a study here before we just start throwing money into a study that I think we could do a cheaper study, I'm saying, and get the same results.
All right. Thank you for that, George. I think we've discussed that as well and the support from the Harbor Advisory Board on this as well. So any other discussion?
Just briefly, that with this contract coming back, we'll be able to see how it would be phased. And so we're not saying we're going to spend all this money right here, right now. There'll be components of the contract that allow a check-in and an evaluation to make sure that we're not, once we get the first phase of information, we're not just going to automatically allocate the second phase. That's what I'm expecting to see in the contract.
Okay. Great. Nancy.
One more quick. I'm sorry.
Nancy, you have your finger on the mic there.
Yes. I think I'll go ahead and support this just because it's asking staff to come back with a report on what the feasibility study will involve and how much it's going to cost. It's not the feasibility study, but it's just a report on what you're going to try to find out and what it'll cost us.
Can I ask another question? Are you saying that we're not going to authorize the money right now, but we're just going to?
What we're doing is we're directing Eric and staff to come back with this proposal. So at that time, we have the discussion to approve it.
Okay. Well, I'll be voting yes.
Okay, all in.
Just one really quick discussion. Because of a lot of other things that this puts in motion or have been put in motion that brought us to this discussion, I don't know if we need to amend the motion, but I would just like to see it come back as soon as we can, have the contract come back to us would be my preference so that we can continue to move forward as quickly as possible. I don't know if we need to amend that.
You know what, I think we can just go ahead and approve the motion. If we need to make a second motion,
okay,
we can do that. Okay. So I would ask that we all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Would you like to hear a motion on a timeline to come back at our next council meeting on that? Or are you?
In terms of urgency or I mean, obviously part of future agenda planning,
I would imagine that if it's the mayor's pleasure that we want to see this at the top of the list, then we put it on the next available council meeting, and that's my, I mean, that's as much direction as I need.
Okay, so it's not like we need, it's not like we need a motion for that.
I don't think we do.
Okay.
You give me direction. I'm not here for the 22nd meeting in April, so.
Okay.
We're just, I was just going to point out Eric won't be here, so if you want him to be here to discuss it, then I'd suggest, has reviewed each year for the last 5 years. It's a service retirement incentive program that was started in 2009. At that time, the reason for starting this program was that the PERS costs had escalated considerably and were going to continue to escalate for employees. And the thought was, not only in the city of Morro Bay, but in a lot of cities, all cities, I think, that if we there was some incentive to get senior employees to leave the organization, that when you bring in employees as a new hire, that you would hire them in at a level, what they call level two, a tier two or even tier three, depending on what the memorandums of understanding were within the organization. CalPERS has specifically stated now and has law which says what tier you have to place new employees in. The thinking was that as senior employees left the organization, that there would be a lower cost for PERS with the new employees. When I came on board, the first thing I saw was this particular program, and I won't go into any details on the cost savings with PERS, but I questioned, frankly, what cities are going to save doing this program in the first place, because it, to me, and the only simple explanation I'll give you without going into a long explanation is that when you reduce a pool that is where the actuarials have done on a pool of employees or an insurance pool or any pool that has a large number of people, and you reduce the size of the pool and you're paying less for those at the lower level, you're now going to start paying more for those people that are left in the pool at the higher level. Because when they do an actuarial, they're going to say, well, we had 100 people in your pool before, but now you only have 50 in the pool. We're going to charge you more for those 50 people. That's an aside from where we are tonight with this, but it's one of the reasons that I became concerned when I saw this. The other concern I have is I don't think the need exists anymore in Morro Bay to do this. We've had 11 employees in the last 5 years that have taken advantage of this program and have retired and have been replaced by new employees, or in some cases maybe not replaced, but I believe they have all probably been replaced. I don't like to make a proposal to council, make recommendations that leave necessarily all the thinking up to council. It's not that you're not capable of that, but I think it's unfair to council to place you in the position of saying, what are we going to do with this? So when the report was originally prepared, you had three alternatives, and there were some reasons that it was written this way, which I won't go into, but one is to continue to fund the program as you have, and I believe there's only one employee, possibly this, well, it could be two, I think, but only one probably is going to even think about taking advantage of this program during the next fiscal year, and I'm not sure that employee is going to do it. The other alternative is to reduce the benefit to the employees if they do retire. A third alternative is to not fund it for this fiscal year and then bring it back. And the thinking on that was, with a new city manager coming on board before the next, after the next fiscal year, before this would come back to council next year, that new manager would have a chance to look at it and evaluate it and see if it was going to be something that they would want to bring forward to the council. Subsequent, however, since I wrote this or had it prepared with Susan, I began to think about it, and frankly, there should be a fourth recommendation, is that's to stop the program and cease the program, because I think personally, if the $10,000, very frankly, I think could be better spent on a broader number of employees than it can on one employee. We're in a situation right now in negotiations, which I've discussed and indicated in my report to council in the past. I've met with all the employee units, the police association, fire, and the SEIU union that represents miscellaneous employees. All of them have agreed to negotiate with staff, wherever the council advises me that they are willing to go with negotiations. The staff persons will represent the council and represent me in the negotiations. We've terminated the contract with the outside consultant. We're not using an outside consultant for any negotiations. We terminated, as you're well aware, the contract for an outside consultant to do the recruitment for city manager. And I personally have never used an outside consultant in any city that I've been in for negotiations, and I don't think it's necessary. All of the units have agreed to do this. I mean, they've all been, I met with all the units myself. They've all agreed to do this. And frankly, I'd rather see the money better spent someplace else rather than benefit just one employee. So my recommendation, which I didn't put in here, but I'm going to be more specific tonight, is that you not fund the program.
Okay. Thank you for that report. Are there any questions for Mr. Grimes to the left? George?
Where does this leave that one employee?
Well, if the employee wanted to retire, the employee is not going to receive the benefit, and they would have to they were eligible last year, and then they came in 4 months late and thought about it and didn't apply. If this was passed tonight to continue the program, the employee would have to, I think, would by the end of May would have
fiscal year and just letting it sit on the books.
And that's why I gave you alternative number three. That was the suggestion. Actually, my original thought was to frankly let you off the hook and for a year and then see where the city's position fiscally is next year.
Or even, you know, several years down the road we may want to reinstate it, but certainly not at this point.
Well, you can always bring it back. I mean, it's simply,
well, I know, but
if you want to
just not
you want to have it on the books that it will be returned to council next year, then I'd suggest alternative number three.
Thank you. I agree.
No, anything? Any other questions either? I'll open up for public comment. Anybody would like to speak to this item may do so now. Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council for discussion. And I'll start to my right. Nancy, do you want to start off on discussion?
Well, I think I already said what I have to say. I think we should go with alternative three, not fund it this year, and just leave it on the books and let it sit there.
Okay, great. Noah?
Thank you. And in looking at this and listening to Mr. Crines, I'm in agreement with him. I think the program served its purpose, and I don't like the idea of leaving it on the books because it's kind of an empty promise that lingers, and it doesn't really have any substance. So my thought, just to be clear, and obviously the option's open later to bring it back, renew it, and so forth. Let's cease the program and end it there, so it's not an additional item that we're carrying along and is hovering around.
George?
excuse me. I'm a little hesitant to stop it completely. I'm with Nancy. There might be a time when we come back and we really want to use it again. Can we start it back up again? Or
absolutely.
If we did what Noah said, and then a later date, we could start it right up again, right?
Yeah, I think what Mr. Smuckler, Councilmember Smuckler, is saying would stop the program. What Councilmember Johnson is suggesting is that it not be funded this fiscal year, which would then it would come back to council next year. That would be the main difference, that you would see it back next year without having to direct staff to bring it back again or a new city manager come forward and say, I think this is a good program and I'm going to bring it back again.
Yeah, I think I'd like to see it brought back again.
Christine?
Thank you. Thanks for the additional option, Mr. Crines. And I think based on your feedback and then listening to some other feedback tonight, it seems that no one really wants to fund it this year. So that seems, although I haven't heard from the mayor yet, but it seems like no one's interested in funding it this year. So therefore, I'm leaning toward stopping it altogether, option four. And then at some point, if it's easy enough to bring back, then we bring it back.
Okay, thanks for that. And, you know, I had this discussion when we had this a year ago, and at that time, the way it was presented that we would approve it in perpetuity, and I wasn't in favor of that and was more interested in having this come back at another time. The whole approval of in perpetuity, you know, I think I'm in support of not funding this year and, in fact, seizing the program, because I think, actually, if we get into a situation where we want to evaluate, we want another service retirement incentive program, structurally, that could be totally different. and probably should be looked at differently, depending on what your goal is and what you want to achieve, whether there's 37 employees or 10. Maybe not all the time you want to be losing all 37 employees. So, I would be in favor of ceasing this program entirely. And then, in the future, if we strategically, if there's a, good necessity to do that, we could look at it with a fresh look and then take it on from there. So that would be my my discussion on that. And with that, I think we just let's take a motion then, and we'll take a motion that we cease the program in its entirety and not fund it this year and discontinue the program. That was a motion.
Second.
So I have a motion and a second. Motion by Jamie, second by Noah. Any more discussion?
I will be voting no on your motion because I think at this point we are in a state of transition, not only council-wise with an election coming up, but also with staff looking for a new city manager. And I just think it's a mistake to stop an ongoing program at this point.